of angels clap for me. Let me hide myself in thee. Let the waters and the blood from thy wounded side which flowed be of sin the double cure. Cleanse me from its guilt and power, not the labors of my hands can fulfill thy law's demand. Could my zeal nor life respite know, could my tears forever flow, all for sin could not atone. Thou must save, and thou alone. Nothing in my hand I bring, simply to thy cross I cling. Naked come to thee for dress, helpless look to thee for grace. Bow I to the fountain's light. Wash me, Savior, lest I die. When my pilgrimage I close, victor o'er the last of foes. When I soar to worlds unknown, see thee on thy judgment throne. Rock of ages, cleft for me. Let me hide myself in thee.
Greetings, Zogling, Wigger, and Mamzer Ass Clowns across the fruited, netted Zog Plain, in the open air, coast-to-coast nut house that we call Zog Babylon, the third and the final. And also to the pitiful few, lost and now found, sheep of the house of Israel, the remnant, ye chosen seed of Israel's race, you who did hear Christ call, and who Christ did call. Because, folks, you do not choose Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ chooses you. And because you have race, you have been extended grace. Greetings. This is episode number 87.5 of the Movement Turd. And I call it Ich hat einen Kamerad. Or I had a comrade. And the chat took place on the 15th of September, 2011, which was the second anniversary of the dead comrade. Now, his name was Hengist. I called him Hengist. His actual name was Rex Tebalt. And he had, as a child, been brought over from England during pretty well the prime of World War II. To this nation, his mother and him, when he was, what, 2 or 3 years old, and essentially they were just pretty well just evacuated. Their father, the father and the husband had been killed, I think, earlier in the war or something. And, well, after the war was over, there was no hurry to go ahead and, you know, send them on back. And essentially, they stayed in the United States. They never went back. And as a result, Hengist, or Rex, was a, quote, resident alien. He was a white man. As time went on, he got into the Worldwide Church of God, Herbert Armstrong's Worldwide Church of God. But he had a number of questions, and pretty well, he then migrated into dual seedline Christian identity. And me and Hengist were close. He was my best friend for a number of years after, well, right around 2000 or so to about 2005 when I got thrown in jail. And I'd ask him to do a number of things for me, and he didn't do them, and I'll go ahead and come into it. But I called him while I was in the nut house in December 2005, when I got a phone card, or January 2006,
And to my hurt, surprise, and shock, Hanga said that I was a sociopath. I said I was nuts. He said all this sort of thing. And it got to where it got too painful to go ahead and call on both sides. He went ahead and justified what I thought was a betrayal. But I always knew that Hengist was an older man. He'd reached, 65? I think he got a social security check, but he also had a pension from the Washington state government, for whom he worked a number of years in the field of data mining. Or data, not data mining, but data manipulation for the government, on these old IBM mainline machines. And he had a rather first-rate mind, but as far as character, I guess he really wasn't a leader or anything like that, like myself. And he acted to me sort of like an older brother and confidant. And so when he betrayed me, I really hurt. And I thought there were two reasons for that betrayal. Either Hengist was a Zogboss from day one, or because he was a resident alien with no citizenship, even though he'd lived in the United States for 60 years, that essentially he got threatened with deportation and losing his pension. And about, after I got out, I never, last time I talked to him, I was moved from Biggs to Gulman, medium security, and things didn't improve. So I called him sometime. Last time I ever called him was in October 2007. I ended up getting out in October 2008. They still had the little charges over me, but because I was able to be my own attorney and able to go ahead and pretty well, be, free and then say whatever I wanted on my webpage. Essentially, the bogus charges got dismissed. But me and Hengist, I knew he existed. I would go ahead and see him on old Pure Silly or Tiger Lily or Pure Silly. She called herself Pure Lily. She's a stupid Whigger twat who essentially follows Jews, follows whatever. She's just a little hobbyist. She wants to have control over a white man. And I would see her on her Yahoo groups. I would see Hengist every so often. And then another friend, Pastor John Britton, pretty well said that Hengist was sick. Well, around summer, John Knight went in and called, and he still thinks Hitler is a Jew, and that Eli James, who is a Jew, isn't a Jew. He's actually a Portuguese. That explains why he doesn't look white. He's Portuguese. He got a little bit of nigger in him, but he's not a Jew. Well, essentially, you can't argue with John Knight, but I did put into him, what happened to old Hengist? And John Knight went ahead and looked and looked and looked and looked, and he went in and found out that Hengist had died on September 15th, 2009. But until I went ahead and brought up the question, here were his real good friends. Here were his real good friends, John Knight and Pure Silly, and his enemy, who pretended to be somewhat of his friend, Andy Blanchard's Manzer Belialson Anderson. The cocksucker went ahead and first banned me, and then ended up banning Hengist and all the other dual seedliners from his Holy Wars whore site, which had, Debbie Clunt Downey and her little meerkat and Maggie Bell Bitch Butts and the Jew, Richard Nimala. It took nearly, Hengist had been dead 1 year, 11 months, a week and a day, before they found out on August 23rd of 2011 that Hengist were dead. Here's his so-called good friends, who really, I guess, really weren't all that good of friends. Because here they let someone die by himself, and essentially they didn't care enough to go ahead and find out. I went ahead and found out simply by John Knight telling me that Hengist was dead. I went ahead and did a Google search in 30 minutes I found out Hengist's obituary and found out that John Knight and, you know, Pure Silly and Andy Anderson had gone ahead, and a week or, you know, about a week, you know, 2 weeks before, had gone ahead and given condolences. But folks, nobody even thought to think about him being dead until I went ahead and raised it up at the end of around July or so. Didn't even think to go ahead and think it up. Well, anyway, I still was hurt at Hengist's betrayal. But I went ahead and told Pastor John Britton that Hengist had, I found out Hengist had been dead. And he told me, well, since Hengist didn't have anybody except his cat, you know, I might as well tell you, I went and embraced Hengist for betraying you, you know, when you were at the Nut House. And essentially, Hengist told me that the INS, the feds, came to him and threatened him with being deported back to England without a single penny, without a stipend, without his pension, without Social Security, without anything, to go ahead and deport him penniless. So, folks, my imprisonment was not just due to Newton County. It wasn't just due to the state of Missouri. It was due to federal Zog going after me, deliberately. So, folks, I have no love for Zoglings. I have no use for anybody who goes and supports them. As far as I'm concerned, it's a war. It's a civil war. On one side, the pitiful few remnant, the chosen seed of Israel's race who will be rescued, and because of whom the Great Tribulation will come at an end, and the rest of it, the rest of, you know, so-called humanity, or which I call sub-humanity, the Mamsers, the Niggers, the Gooks, the Chinks, the Beaners, and the Whiggers, as far as I'm concerned, they need to die. And folks, I am so grateful there's Great Tribulation which is coming, which will go ahead and exterminate them all, which will finish them all off. And folks, this is what this program's about. It's about telling you not to go ahead and join a bowel movement organization in which is thoroughly compromised by Jews like Eli James and Bill Fink and Mamsers like Jeremy Visser and Dan Johns and all these other critters, evil critters, Whiggers, and the rest even pretend to be Christian identity. They're not. Don't join the bowel movement. Don't go ahead and join the militia. Don't go ahead and join the NSM. Don't become a bunch of uniformed clowns. Don't join the above ground talks to Christian identity congregation. Don't send any of these worthless bastards any money. Don't do this stupid shit. What you do is you go ahead and make yourself right with Yahweh first, then look to your family, and then after that, since you know who the Jews and Mamsers and criminals and pigs and lawyers and the rest are of your local community, well, when the time comes, you go ahead as Yahweh's warriors and you rise up and put an end to them. But folks, for now, Zog is all-powerful. It's not all-knowing. But essentially, it's collapsing. It is not up to you to go ahead and help Zog collapse. It's up to you to make sure that you survive this deluge. And that's what you should be, you know, staying first. Do not worry about what goes on in the Zog land today, because there is nothing you can do about it. And folks, if you go ahead and try to go ahead and get involved, you will end up like me, and you may not be as tough as me, because I've lost my family. I've lost my grandchildren. I lost 3.5 years out of my life. I went ahead and lost a bunch of teeth when Newton County Pig went ahead and, you know, shoved me into a concrete sidewalk. Zog was out to murder me, and it was a county, it was a local event, it was a state event, and it was a Zog Babylon event, because here they were going to my friend. And folks, in this episode of the Movement Turd, September 15th on the second anniversary, I forgive my friend, I forgive my comrade, Hengist. And that is why you end up having this funeral march, this funeral music being played right here, right now. So, folks, there's other things here involving the bowel movement, but it's really Hengist Day. It's really Rex Tebalt's day today in this episode of the Movement Turd, number 87.5 of 15th September 2011. So folks, enjoy or not, hail victory.
Yes, I admit, we got a Wigger problem. Wigger's always on my mind. The way they run to and fro, super ways you'll never find. Yes, I admit, we got a Wigger problem. Build a drop up to the top. The way they run to and fro, and they're always eating crop. I wake up and ride away, the way you come to mind. The way they run to and fro, the way you'll never find. Yes, I admit, we got a Wigger problem. Wigger's always on my mind. The way they run to and fro, the Wiggers you'll never find. Yes, I admit, we got a Wigger problem. Build a drop up to the top. The way they run to and fro, and they're always eating crop. Wiggers keep remembering how good Zog used to be. Being caught long stone, afraid of memory. Yes, I admit, we got a Wigger problem. Wiggers always on my mind. The way they run to and fro, the Wiggers you'll never find. Yes, I admit, we got a Wigger problem. Build a drop up to the top. The way they run to and fro, and they're always eating drop. The way they run to and fro, and they're always eating drop.
Greetings, Zogling, Wigger, and Manzer Ass Clouds across the fruited nutted Zog Plain in the open air coast to coast nut house that we call Zog Babylon, the third and the final. And also to my present audience, at least of tonight, and Pigfried, of course, Brian Real, whatever, the lost sheep, and also some of them who have been found, and some of them who, like Pigfried, are a bunch of mangy jukels, going ahead and eating some rather diseased animals with my blessing. Greetings. This is episode number 87.5 of the Movement Turd. And tonight is the 15th of September, 2011. I'm running behind again. Well, again, like always. And tonight's episode is going to be called, I Had a Comrade, or in the German word would be called, Ich hatte einen Kameraden. And I'm going to go ahead and play that as one of the songs to this selection. Because tonight is the second anniversary of my friend Hengist, also known as Rex Tebalt, Tebow, T-H-I-B-A-U-L-T, who died 2 years ago. And essentially, until I went ahead and found out, I don't think he had anybody to mourn for him other than his brand new cat. He's sort of like William Pearson, that matter. He was brought over
in 1943 from London, England, or wherever in England, with his mother, because from what I gather, his father had died early in the war, and England was fighting against Germany for a number of years, over two years before essentially Franklin Delano Roosevelt had maneuvered us into having a war with Germany, a second one. And him and his mother were the only ones who were brought over, and I guess she didn't have any other pups. And she died at a fairly old age, and, you know, old Hengist, and I'm going to go ahead and use his name, as opposed to Rex. Rex and I became pretty good friends, and after I got kicked off the Granby Telephone Company by this evil bitch pretending to be Christian Identity named Peggy Butts, and that's not a real name, but she was a confidant of Clint Downey, just another evil bitch in Christian Identity, just like you have all these evil critters which come into it. And essentially she got me kicked off of the Granby Telephone Company, and the internet from the Granby Telephone Company. So essentially I went out and bought a cell phone. I had Roxy buy a cell phone. We had one cell phone. And so that's who we were just going to go ahead and use it to make calls out, not pay the Granby Telephone Company anything. And for 6 months, I was essentially off the internet. Now, I had this Monet.com account, and I would go over about once a week and loan one of my surplus computers to Cousin Debbie, who lived on the outskirts of town. They would make a call, download my email, cut it to a CD-ROM, bring it back home, and pretty well work on it. And this crap occurred from, essentially her call, her bitch, that got me kicked off was dated September 10th, 2001. Well, I went ahead and wrote one hell of an article, went to bed, and the next day was September 11th, 2001. And everybody knows that essentially my saying is that, hey, folks, I wasn't stalking Maggie Bell bitch butch. Essentially, I was insulting the stupid bitch, and she was all annoyed at me because I told her that no, in Christian Identity, a female was supposed to remain silent in church, and her and Clint Downey couldn't go ahead and stand that. Now, how Clint Downey got around that is being a big whore. She found her a meerkat to take her off of hooking for the Ku Klux Klan. And soon after, I got back on the internet in April of 2002. You had Andy Anderson. You had this Jew named Richard Nimra, who is pretty well close to this other Sephardic Jew named Eli James, also known as Joseph November. You had these Jews running around, and it was just the same as back in 2001. But in the meantime, since Hengist lived in Washington, D.C., he went ahead and found out two items of information. And these two items of information, number one was, okay, number of other ones was, is that, okay, I'm looking at the, no, his dope smell hasn't affected his memory. What is my fruits here? Well, my fruits is that I don't have any juicy fruits. So, anyway, Lindstedt never showed a picture of Paul Rodriguez. Essentially, Visser is just lying like crazy again here. But folks, you had today even wall-to-wall more Mamsers than what you used to have back in 2001. At least the critters that were in, like old Maggie and Clint Downey, they were just pure old-fashioned white trash. Now what you have is you have more Jews and Mamsers. Now, of course, Nimla, Richard Nimla, and I think the old kike is still alive, or at least he was a couple months ago, writing on Eli James's forum.
And here you have, I'm going to go ahead and get to John Knight and the rest here. But folks, back in the old days, you used to have Whiggers. You used to have a Whigger problem. And you still do. But, and what happens, I'm going to come on later. I mean, the purpose of these chats is to go ahead and lay down 30-minute tracks and then cut it up with music. But getting with Hengist, he went ahead and found, since he lived up around the Olympia area in Covington, initially when he moved home in 2002, was in that area as well. And pretty well they corresponded, and I think Hengist actually had a telephone number for Covington, but I was at odds with Covington at the time, and I didn't want to freak Covington out by calling him or anything like that. So essentially and Hengist didn't really like what Covington had written in Hail to the Ravens. He, like all Chris and Danny, were sort of annoyed at the time. But getting, Visser has heard about it. See, Visser knows what is going on. It's just that Visser lies about it. He's both with Visser, he's both with Fink, and he's with Eli James from time to time. Visser is another Mamser dog trying to get into Christian Identity. But I went ahead, and since Clint Downey, soon after I got in there, here was Andy Anderson, here was Nimala, here was Maggie Bitch, Bell Bitch Butts, even while she was claiming she didn't get me off, she was trying to get me kicked off from my new internet service provider, and they made a bunch of mistakes here, and I went ahead and pointed out how they had been stalking me. And essentially, Nimala, Andy Anderson, and Maggie Butts were pretty well told, folks, you keep it up, you're going to have your own internet connections kicked off. And Andy Anderson decided to, back off. But, Hengist had gone ahead and found out that, I guess, old Mark Downey's parents were alive, and they owned a number of rental houses. So what happens is that, just like Liar Bill DeClue, old Mark Downey was a so-called clod or chaplain, third in command of the Ku Klux Klan. He ran off with this bitch who called herself the Clayliff, a.k.a. Debbie Badinsky or something like that. They had a Washington State Imperial Dragon at the time named Badinsky or something like that. And from what I gather, supposedly he loved looking at porn. But the thing that could definitely be proved is that old Mark Downey had gone ahead and ran off to the Klansman's wife and installed her in a little love nest one of his parents' rental houses. I guess he was tupping her. That could go ahead and be proven. So essentially, Debbie Downey, a.k.a. Clint Downey, and Mark Downey are, according to Christian Identity law, they're adulterers. Well, that was what could be proved. What could not be proved so much is that three women had gone ahead and told the story of that how Mark Downey met Debbie Downey, or what would become Debbie Downey, Debbie Badinsky at the time, is that at this Klan meeting, old Debbie would essentially fuck everybody who was there and have her husband, the Klansman, go ahead and film it and look at her or something like that here. And, folks, you'd have, from what I gather, membership went up after the sexual mascot, free sucky fucky here from old Clint. And pretty well, this stuff was not unknown because a number of the wives and girlfriends, I don't know if they got clapped from Clint or not, but essentially it got around. It was well known in Western Washington State around the Peninsular area around Olympia, Port Orchard, and that's where Clint and Mark Downey lived. And Larry Blanchard lived around there. Larry Blanchard he's a one seed liner. He moved off to Tennessee. But essentially, it was well known. It was fairly well known in the Washington State area, but it was not well known in Southwest Missouri. So me and Hengist decided that what happens is that I'd just gotten back on the internet. I'd go ahead and let Hengist make his accusations, see how much screaming there was, and then I would go ahead and drop the bombshell. And Hengist, or Rex, had three women who went ahead and what happens, I got something on Skype, and pretty well they were typing into me. But anyway, old Debbie was pretty well in addition to being a whore because she ran off from the husband, was essentially screwing everybody. And I went ahead and revealed that, and I said, well, no wonder the Grand Dragon allowed you to be called. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to go ahead and pick it up. Anyway, you allowed this woman to not only call herself the Kalela for the second command, and you allowed not only the woman to call herself the second in command. In any case, you went ahead and allowed not only this bitch to go ahead and do all this other stuff, run off, but you allowed her to call herself the Kalela. And I said, as far as I'm concerned, you know, Debbie, you're not the Clan Kalela, you're the Clan Klunt. Essentially what you are is that you are essentially a sexual mascot, and about the only part of you that is used is, well, your cunt. So therefore, instead of calling yourself the Clan Kalela, you ought to call yourself the Clan Klunt. Well, anyway, the nickname of Klunt Downey stuck to old Debbie. And this was just a couple days after I got back on the internet in April of 2002. And essentially, she's been known as Klunt Downey ever since, and she does not like that here. In fact, I'm hated far more than pretty well everybody, although the bitch hated Willie Martin and the rest. She got her worthless husband, Mark Downey, to essentially call himself a pastor after Larry Blanchard ran off to Tennessee without telling them anything, because essentially Larry Blanchard didn't really want to know anything about it. One of these women who supposedly had gone ahead and ratted out Klunt, back then her name was Tiger Lily, and now what happens is that, you know, she calls herself Pure Lily. I call her Pure Silly. And essentially, she used to know Rex, and she used to know Klunt, and she was one of the women that not ratted out Klunt. But Klunt named, you know, Klunt went ahead and whined like a pussy after about a week, said, you and Hengist are spreading, not lies, but malicious gossip. Klunt couldn't deny the fact that she was a big old whore. You know, both in the sense of being adulterous and in the sense of being, well, a big old whore, even though I guess I'm not sure she got paid in money or what she got paid in. But she came up and said that she'd had a bunch of problems with her husband, you know, with her husband, the Grand Dragon. And essentially, he wanted a divorce, too. And pretty well, the Klunt ran off with the Kalela. Now, this evil bitch claims to be a female of God, and she is oftentimes demanded that I get beaten up for daring to say the truth about this evil bitch. Same way with Eli James and the rest here. Folks, they claim slander and they claim libel. But essentially, they're not willing, you know, all they can do is claim slander and libel. Eli James is the same thing, but he's a Jew. So, anyway, Hengist went ahead and he didn't want to tell of the stuff that he couldn't directly prove, especially since he'd gone ahead and told me that he wouldn't go ahead and say, you know, which women had gone ahead and ratted out Klunt. But Klunt went ahead and figured out the name of one of them. See, Klunt is an experienced liar. That bitch did go ahead and essentially name one of the women. And I went ahead and parried by saying, well, Klunt, don't you know how many people you're fucking after the Klan meeting? How do you know that they're not all unmarried or without any other women? Essentially, the time they get to go ahead and pork your fat ass is the high point of the meeting. Why, some of them might have wives, and some of them might have girlfriends, and who don't really like the fact that they're men folks are going to going to Klan meetings and, you know, getting to go ahead and, you know, hump your big fat ass. Now, from what I gather, she was not really, she really didn't have a big fat ass, but she, from what I gather, her main attribute wasn't so much her face, but the fact she had a rather nice full set of tits. Now, I'm sure they're pancake tits by now. But anyway, Larry Blanchard went ahead and ran off, and their second big hate was Pete Peters. They hated Pete Peters. They talked shit about Pete Peters. According to Mark Downey, he's gone ahead and come up with this Shelton Emery nonsense of no devil doctrine. And essentially, Mark Downey went ahead and abandoned. Now, Larry Blanchard, I don't think, came up with the no devil horseshit. He was the one seed liar. Now, he started out as a Methodist preacher to the Little Brown Brothers. Now, folks, you have a big old naval base here in Washington State called Bremerton or something like that. That's where Andy Anderson came in from. His sister, one of the sisters, was married to a Filipino, and one of them was married to a Jew. And essentially, I think old Will, you know, I think old Andy used to be a race mixer himself here. He used to screw Filipinos. And essentially, what he was a one seed liner who got brought in by, I think, this FBI operation, Take Over Holy War, and that's what he did. You see, folks, in fighting against Zog and Zogling against infiltration, this present thing with Eli James is not my first time. It's about really my third major fight. And you used to have a little bitty ones on the email list here. But, and, you know, the biggest one was around 2000 to 2002. And essentially how I deal with infiltration by Zoglings and Jews is essentially these Jews come in. These Mazars come in. And what they do is that they come in, and the first thing they do is that they kick out all their Christian, white, Aryan rivals. They kick them out. And then what they do is they go ahead and bring themselves, they insinuate themselves into there. And once they go ahead and kick somebody off here, they do the same thing about trying to kick people off the internet, just like Brian Real did. And they try the same sort of stupid shit. And here are the rest of these clowns pretending that these people are morally equivalent to you. Because you're fighting with these dirty Jews, you're morally equivalent to them. And I used to be pretty annoyed at John Knight for essentially not noticing that Richard Niemoller was a Finnish Jew. That essentially did evil. Right, today you have Ashkenazi Alphalite. Anchorage, who does this thing here. You know what I mean? So, I'm going ahead and looking at the chat some more. So, in any case, you have somebody imitating my name, and I think it's a sort of a Nimbuster. In any case, going in, it often pays for me to go ahead and have long pauses during this when I'm recording stuff, because I can go ahead and use the MP, you know, the wave pad thing. Folks, what we end up having is that we've had the same bunch of Jews and Mamzers and the rest that's gone ahead and infiltrated. I've explained how I deal with it. I find out the dirt on these people, find out what they are, who they are, and essentially they do not like being revealed for what they are at all, and I don't really blame them. Jews and Mamzers know that if they get detected too much, eventually they will go ahead and there will be a pogrom. And they'll be run off. But what they do is that they do have some initial, almost always they have some initial success. They go ahead and take over the Yahoo group, be it Holy Wars. Or they go ahead and take over TalkShoe, and they do whatever they want. And you got to realize that these corporations side with the Jews. In many cases, they're owned by the Jews. What they do is they allow Jews to not take any personal responsibility for the evil they do. That's why the corporations are so loved. You have people who
essentially use a corporation to steal, to go ahead and rob, to go ahead and mine that social order. And if you end up having a criminal corporation, you should not allow that corporation to essentially go unpunished. Yes, you can go ahead and civilly take their money, but what you should do is you should also go ahead and put the officers of the corporation that does the criminal activity and their entire families to death. So, far from using a corporation as a article to go ahead and plunder and steal, why, essentially, all that corporation does is go ahead, and since it concentrates the evil, you need to go ahead and diffuse and concentrate the punishment as well. You know, getting on with, Visser, I've already gone and explained when I figured out Visser. Anyway, the Downies hated Pete Peters because Pete Peters, unlike them, was successful. He would have at least a several thousand, population congregation. Was as big as Wesley Swiss, but it was very substantial. Whereas little Meerkat Mark and little Clint Downey, essentially all they had is about four or five Klansmen. And now she was no longer screwing them, so she sort of lost them, and everybody knew that she was a big slut. They knew that Mark Downey was a weak, weak, weak character with the only strong part Mark has is he used to be a pretty good graphics artist. He probably still is. Now, I've gone ahead and looked at his sermons, and they've gotten better. But 10 years ago, they were awful. They were just pure awful. Now they're just sanctimonious and slick and glib and idiotic, and that's why he's over on the Sperm Front telegony, Christian telegony section, as I call their little, bogus Christian identity section. And there's nothing much there. He went ahead and went to Sheldon Emery because, it got to where Pete Peters and Pete Peters' followers pretty well told Clint and him that they didn't want them around, any of Pete Peters' stuff, so he wasn't really welcome among the mainstream one-seed liners. Clint was the first one that came up with this crap about how she had been with Butler, she'd been with everybody, she'd been with this person, that person, and she was naming names. And from what I gather, they sort of knew of her, but just thought she was just an uppity whore with big tits. So, for my guy, they didn't really encourage her, but on the other hand, they didn't slap her down like I did. So, she claimed that she started out dual seed line and that she had gone ahead and got to where she was one seed line. And then she got to where she was a no-devil doofus. Pretty well, me and Hengist remarked that this was the first time ever because, folks, just like a lot of these people, like this Charles Scott Thornton. Once you go ahead and go Christian identity, and then you go to dual seed line, essentially, there's no going back. You might become like David Lane, become a wokenist, or you might become like Tom Metzger, who used to be one of Butler's ordained ministers. You become essentially a solipsist / atheist or / agnostic, who essentially worships yourself. But once you've gone ahead and been Christian identity, especially dual seed line, you don't go back to a lower or weaker form of Christianity. You pretty well leave Christianity altogether. So, any case, Hengist and I were very, very, very close here. After I'd been kicked off the Granby Telephone Company, I was not going to spend another dime in long distance or anything on these evil bastards. So we went to a cell phone company, one of the cheaper ones, and we bought a plan for one cell phone to be used, for 500 minutes for $39.95, and the very first couple of months would be at $19.95. And essentially, that plan was from 7 to 7 instead of 9 to 7 or whatever. 9 o'clock in the evening starting at 7 o'clock in the morning, being prime time. No, it's from 7 to 7. So it was a pretty good plan. So Roxy went ahead and got it, and we lived on one, you know, cell phone. Now, over the years, Roxy's gone ahead and added her worthless relatives to it. And a lot of times they don't pay their bills, so Roxy ends up having to do so. And I keep on telling her maybe we need to just go ahead and get a no-contract plan with Walmart, to where essentially we just simply pay $30 a piece, and we go ahead and go with that. Just 1,000 minutes, which you don't use, just leave it at that. But she doesn't want to do that. So, in any case, me and Hengist were very, very, very close. And the night, the day on April 9th when they were taken, old Hengist was there for me. He really was my good friend here. And folks, this occurred before I ever met Pastor John Britton. Remember, Pastor John Britton wanted me sometime in December 2004 after the Christmas coup, or early 2009 or 2005, he wanted me to go ahead and support his good friend, Morse Gillette. So Hengist was a very good friend of mine from essentially the days of Holy War in 2000 or so, and then after September 11th, 2001. But I'm going to go ahead and go in the next section, moving third, to, well, Hengist betrayal. So, folks, what I want to go ahead and say is that, folks, in this movement, you might think you have friends, but what you're going to end up finding is that they're not really friends; they're rather acquaintances. They're people who go ahead and play at being your friends, and you don't even know who they are, and you find out who they are quick enough. So, I'm going to go ahead in the next section. I'm going to go ahead and take a break and talk about, you know, Hengist betrayal. So folks, hail victory. Okay, folks, I was dealing with the chat, having a few ginger snaps. Anyway, it looks like looks like Northwest is living his dream, and pretty well he's selling his furniture from wherever the heck he lives now, and he has gotten his dream job, and he's going to head up to the Northwest somewhere. I'm not going to go ahead and say exactly where. And I advise him that if he goes up to Seattle or Portland to say, Harold who? And if he goes to Kalispell, to go ahead and say, April who? And folks, for those of you who are going, someone went ahead and asked me what happened to Corn Cob. I was looking last week on BNNF to look for news. And from what I gather, old Craig Corn Cob is in Williston, North Dakota, telling all the other VNNF tards that he wants them to go ahead and get in touch with them. They can make $15 to $17 an hour as a roustabout. They don't need to have any, experience or anything like that. They just have to have a strong back and a weak mind, and if they have a little bit stronger mind, they can go ahead and raise up real quick here. One of my friends is, common-law son-in-law has a, has a strong back and a very weak mind, and he's gone up from being a roustabout to being a luber. From what I gather, he lubes these drill things, or he lubes these rigs, or he lubes the machinery that runs the rigs. I guess he's a luber. And what he does is that he makes sure that these parts, which need a lot of grease, get the grease. So he's gone up from being a roustabout to being a luber. And from what I gather, he's getting $20 an hour as a luber. And from what I gather, my friend goes ahead and tells me what a, this character we call Tony the Pony has gone up from being a roustabout meerkat to being a luber meerkat. So he's gone up from going from $15, starting out to about $20 or so as being a luber. And essentially, Corn Cob wants all these other VNNF tards to go up without any skills other than sitting and whining and acting like meerkats, to go up to North Dakota, where he is, where he's been, and essentially make this good size money, because you can make very good money and you don't even have to be a roustabout. Now, for my guy, Corn Cob is making pretty good money. He's a little bit, he's about 60 years old. He's in fairly good shape, but he's not really a roustabout. But from what I gather, he's doing something. He's pretty well the support for all these people. And from what I gather, Corn Cob has got him a tent. He's got him a GP Small or something here. And what he's planning to do, he's saving his Zog Bucks up, a couple thousand Zog Bucks, so when he gets a little bit of time off, he's going to run on down to Nebraska and buy somebody's old RV or pickup camper trailer or travel trailer or what have you for a couple thousand dollars, and then bring it back up and park it on one of these concrete slabs, which has a sewer connection and a electrical connection, and essentially hook it up so that when winter comes, he will have at least an RV in there. And folks, you see pictures, these YouTube videos of all these, they're building a few houses, but for people who are going to be there for year-round, but very much they're at the back in oil fields, and what they're doing is that they are, since it takes a while to go ahead and plant, essentially what they're doing is they're just going ahead and making sewer connections, electrical connections, and planting about 6 inches of concrete in a square, level with the ground. They go ahead and dig it down about 6-8 inches, and they pour the concrete, and they leave a hole for the sewer line, and they go ahead and have big old electrical power there. And essentially, you hook the electrical, you hook the electric, and you hook the sewer. You back up the RV or travel trailer, whatever, and you simply just get a length of 6-inch pipe or 4-inch pipe, however many pipe there is here, and essentially you end up having a sewer and water connection, which they turn on. And that is how they are paying for the fact that, all these people, all these boom towns need to have you know, water and sewer. And that's how they're doing it. And old Corn Cob says that he's trying to save $65,000 in order to buy 20 acres in Kalispell. So essentially, old Corn Cob, that's where Corn Cob is. He's at the Boomtown. And so are a number of other people. In any case, for the Pod Blank compound. Well, folks, you folks wanted some movement news here. I gave you some movement news here. Old Corn Cob is no longer in the Great Northwest, but on the other hand, he's no longer in a hole in Kalispell, around Kalispell. Rather, what happens is that, like I told a few people here, if you go ahead and go over to VNNF, go ahead and type in, do search for Craig Cobb, and Corn Cobb is back on VNNF. If you're a VNNF tard, or even if you aren't a VNNF tard, even if you're a CI tard or a Mamzer tard or whatever, hell, even Visser could probably go ahead and get a job up in Williston. And even Visser could get a job probably up in Williston, North Dakota, or somewhere around there at the Boomtown. And folks, it's about to turn cold. You know, my mother, who's up in South Dakota, said it's been turning cold and it's been rainy up there. Rather rainy for South Dakota. We might end up having climate change for all practical purposes. So, my brother's up there, and essentially I've been trying to get him to move her back to the farm outside of Granby for the winter. Because the South Dakota winter is no fun. So can you imagine what a North Dakota winter, which is about 300 miles, north of South Dakota, would be like? I was at North Dakota. I was on North Dakota on December 28th, and folks, you had 4.5 hours of sunlight on December 28th. When was that? 1990, I believe. 1990. No, it was December 28th of 1989, I believe. In any case, December 28th of 1989 or 1990. I think it was 1989. And you had 4 hours of sunlight. And it never did get above, freezing. It got down to, it was around at the high part of the day when I went ahead and I went ahead and left off a box of something or another, and I picked up a load of birdseed in Sears, North Dakota, and pretty well drove it across to Detroit at a warehouse in Detroit. I guess back then they were feeding birds in a Detroit warehouse, a Detroit area warehouse or something like that. It wasn't quite Detroit. It was someplace outside Detroit. So from here, and it was -6 degrees. Even people who lived up in North Dakota let their rigs freeze up, let their trucks freeze up. I didn't. I bought number one diesel, and then I bought number one diesel, and I just poured plenty of freeze additives so I would not freeze out. Because you can freeze to death up in North Dakota. You can freeze to death in South Dakota. In fact, some of these people from North Dakota are talking about just simply cutting the north from Dakota, just simply call it Dakota, or call it Upper South Dakota, okay? So, anyway, Marty has no stories. Marty's related to Crazy Horse. No, Marty is not related to Crazy Horse, okay? Anyway, where was I at here? Well, we had some people were asking about that. The other news I found out is I went ahead and invited Jim Giles. I went ahead and gave him the TalkShoe link, and Jim Giles' email account is bouncing. So from what I gather, I went ahead and then checked up Radio Free Mississippi, and the domain name is up. So, folks, there's no more Radio Free Mississippi. There's no more Jim Giles. I mean, he may or may not be back. I'm not really going to miss him too much. You know, but on the other hand, you know, he's not as bad as Visser, Eli James, and the rest of these here Mamzers. Okay. Alrighty. Well, that's not very nice, you know. That's not very nice here. Anyway, check the Jackson obits here. Well, hey. Let me go ahead and cover. I'm going to go ahead and take another break. I'm going to go ahead and start just some, you know, immediately here in a minute. Okay, folks, I went ahead and covered some other movement news, like what happened to Corn Cob. Well, Corn Cob's in North Dakota. What happened to Jim Giles? He's disappeared. I'm going to go ahead and now talk about, Hengist and Hengist's betrayal, as I looked at it. Okay? Now, when I had my grandchildren taken away August 9th, 2004, it was because, essentially, I knew that Newton County Zog and I knew that Missouri Zog was against me here because, essentially, I was running for governor against Matt Runt Blunt. How dare I go ahead as a racist white and run against these wonderful Republicans? And, folks, these Republicans are bigger race traitors than the Democrats. But to an ordinary Republican, essentially, the vote of white people are their property. And I've seen them going ahead and working to destroy the U.S. Taxpayer Party, which was founded by a Jew named Howard Phillips, which later became the Constitution Party. which now is pretty well, you know, like Edgar Steele found out, is infested by niggers, or Mormons who love niggers because they wouldn't allow him to run for governor. These stupid Mormons came in, they took over the party, elected a nigger, show how non-racist Mormons they were, and then they went ahead and, you know, kicked out the old people, went ahead and founded it. And this nigger would not allow Edgar Steele to go ahead and run for, you know, for governor. Folks, that's the way these political parties are. But all through the 1990s, you would have these small little third parties on the right, other than the Libertoons, try to go ahead and form. And every single time, you would have this Missouri Republican Assembly. And part of it was this Jew named Richard Nimoy. You would have them go ahead and, you know, with Don Griffin, the rest of these people, deliberately try to destroy these third parties. Because they looked at it, they needed every single vote they could get. And this was exceptionally the case in the early, in 2000, 2002, 2003, 2004, 5, and 6. When pretty much what was happening is that you would have the races for governor and United States Senator decided by a fraction of a percentage. That's how much Minstrel Show Mel went ahead and beat John Ashcroft. See, in the 90s, the Missouri Republican Party was pretty well, you know, run by what happened is because of this piece of shit who lived around here named Bill Webster, whose father used to be a high-powered senator, real smart man, and he was attorney general. And essentially, he was letting attorneys loot this workman's comp fund called the Second Injury Fund in return for hustling them for campaign donations. And folks, that's exactly what's been happening for the last 30 years in America. Well, Rick Perry is getting a hard time for using Gardasil for essentially going ahead and forcing these little 12 and 13-year-old girls to have an injection at $300 a piece by executive order, and he was a piece of shit who went ahead and got a whole bunch of money for it. He's a bought and paid for piece of shit. I hope that essentially everybody who's conservative will say, I'd rather vote for the fucking nigger, who is not even an American nigger, than a piece of shit, another Anglo-Macizo, another burnt-out Texican, another Texican piece of shit, pretend to be a conservative when it pleases them, like Rick Perry. Well, folks, throughout the 90s and the early 2000s, you would have these Republicans infiltrate these minor third parties, especially their right-wing parties. And, folks, I was fighting against it here. I went ahead, maybe cost Ashcroft or helped cost Ashcroft the race when he ran for Senate, you know, re-ran for senator against Minstrel Show Mel, against Jim Talon, against, you know, Matt Blunt. And as a result, the people in power did not like me, especially Matt Blunt did here. As far as I'm concerned, Matt Blunt and his entire family and Skunk Blunt and the rest ought to be skinned out, publicly skinned out. Because you have these politicians who are nothing but traitors. They're bought traitors here. At the national level, like the Bushes, they're bought traitors. Always been traitors, ever since the early Bush here. He was just a bought traitor. Some people say he's a Jew. Well, I go ahead and look, and I, you know, just like people said that Clinton was the first nigger president, Bush was the first beaner president. Same way with this Perry. Well, let's go ahead and bring these worthless pieces of shit into this country. So, folks, I always knew that the local Zog, the former Newton County, the former the Newton County Republican Party, had been, you know, hating me since 1996, where I started, even learning as a libertarian and paying, you know, making fun of the Republicans who are the power around here. Folks, these people who are in power are invariably pieces of shit, invariably traitors. And just like every other parasite, which is at the top, when the entire thing falls apart, the same thing is going to end up happening to these traitors. I cannot believe that anybody doesn't feel like simply, in order to dealing with them, simply going ahead and skinning out the entire lot, root, you know, root, trunk, branch and tender twig. Because, folks, even when they're 2 or 3 years old, they're going to grow up to be traitors. All they are, Mamzers or Jews, and essentially, there's nothing good about them. That's what Christian Dandy says here. Is that Jews are the literal spawn of Satan. There's no such thing as a good Jew. And that Mamzers are abominations. And I point to Brian Real, but folks, most of these critters, about Mount Christian Dandy, you go ahead and look at them. They're Anglo mestizos, they're Mamzers, and they act evil. So anyway, Hengist had gone ahead and grown up in Herbert Armstrong's Worldwide Church of God at the age, when he was 2 or 3, he was born in 1941, and in 1943 he told me that he had, you know, him and his mother had been moved out of England. They were essentially, you know, people who were not really likely to go ahead and produce something. England was being built up as a sort of fortress against Germany. Essentially, all they were was just simply targets. A woman and her child. The husband was dead. So essentially, they were moved on a boat across to this country, and Hengist never became a United States citizen. Rather, he became, from the very date, a resident alien. He made his way to Washington State, grew up in the Worldwide Church of God, was a bachelor his entire life. He sort of, just like Franklin Wigger, sort of likes Maui Patricia. Well, he sort of had the hots for Pure Silly. But from what I gather, he never, and people end up calling Hengist a homosexual a couple times, insinuating he was, especially Mark and Clint Downey. So did Andy Anderson, even though Andy Anderson's big marriage was to one of these Filipinos. That's where Larry Blencher came in. He started out as a Methodist in the first, Methodist seminary, and he came to go ahead and talk to little brown brothers and little brown sisters in Manila. So, folks, a lot of these so-called Christian identity people, like Larry Blanchard, why, they started out none too good, and they finished out even worse. A little, and folks, they don't change any. They don't go ahead and become you don't start out evil as a Mamzer and then go ahead and become a good Mamzer or a good Jew, like Eli James, like Larry Blanchard, like the rest. Anyway, Blanchard ran off to Tennessee, and 2002 essentially didn't tell Clint Downey, didn't tell Little Meerkat anything. So essentially, all of a sudden, he became Pastor Mark Downey, and I joked, just like with Ashcroft in his book, which came out, that he had gone ahead and been ordained just like his father at the Assemblies of Christ, bunch out of Springfield, the one who used to ordain Jerry Lee, Jimmy Swaggart. But he had been ordained with an unholy mix of Jergens lotion and Crisco oil. And that's become a Lindsteadism, which has translated around, even though Ashcroft went ahead and wrote it in his book first. Old Mark Downey, he was pretty well anointed with a mixture of Clint's urine, Jergens lotion, and Crisco oil. Crisco's oil. And folks, he's gotten slicker and is no devil horse shit, but folks, he's just simply a liar. He's just simply the humper of the cast-off humper of the Klan's sexual mascot. Essentially, just a rather vicious and stupid, weak man, pretty well used by an old bitch who essentially don't mean nothing no more. But anyway, Hengist understood these people. Hengist was my best friend. And then, here comes Pastor Don Britton here, and he was ordained by his father. He wasn't ordained by Gallet just yet, and I didn't know that Gallet had been kicked out of the Aryan Nations by Ray Redford and by Pastor Butler. And John Britton wanted me, because I was a well-known Christian identity writer, to go ahead and side with Gallet. So I went ahead and sent $20, and I went ahead and got, became a member of the Legion of the Saints, joined the Church of the Sons of Yahweh, sent $20, showed him, went ahead and scanned in my, driver's license, showed me here I am, blue eyes, none too careful about combing my hair, of course, but yeah, I looked like a white truck driver. And what Colette did is that, yeah, sure, fine, just a formality. And I'd had my children taken away, and I talked to Galette here about simply setting up a church here in Southwest Missouri, because Wesley Swift's original California charter had pretty well expired with the death of one of John Britton's relatives. I said, hey, in Missouri, I can just go ahead and charter the Church of Jesus Christ Christian Area Nations of Missouri for $25. Me and Roxy will be the directors here. That's all we need. And Glenn said, go ahead. So then Glenn goes ahead and gets arrested. In the meantime, I urged Galette to have a forum, but he doesn't have the money for a V-Bulletin forum, so I just simply say, why don't you just get a free PHPBB version 2.0 forum and run that on your hoster. And then I urge him to simply make it available to be read by everybody, and then to allow people to go ahead. And Galette is sort of self-righteous. You cannot cuss. But he would bitch at me to go ahead and provide a brand new article, write a brand new article for him. Because he didn't like me even saying shit in some of my old articles. Well, I wasn't too crazy about that. But essentially, when Galette ended up getting arrested for allegedly robbing banks, I was idiotic enough to say, oh, Joshua Taylor Sutter, he's with August Christ. He won't go ahead because he's fighting with August Christ in order to be deemed the new head of the Aryan Nations. Well, I was wrong. You have these people who will go ahead and talk about how tough they are, usually Anglo Mestizos, how tough they are, and then, hey, they're busy ratting people out. And Galette was drunk. He got caught. He was guilty as hell. And Galette, he's been whining like a pussy. He's been lying that supposedly three FBI agents went ahead and said that he would be charged with conspiracy with me. Well, folks, he's only come up with this shit ever since he got out. Because the question of it is if he was going to be charged with a conspiracy to murder, this piece of shit Gillespie, who I talked to for 20 minutes and never threatened, just trying to find out why Galette was in jail and where he was at. I found out where he was at. And essentially started a letter writing campaign to go ahead and take care of Galette and Scott Thornton. And then 10 days later, I was arrested on two weeks later, I was arrested on these bogus child molestation cases. Now, folks, with Hengist, I sent him a letter, the passwords to our list servers, Zog's War, all these other places. I went ahead and sent them the username and password to martinlinstead.org and to whitenationalist.org. Went ahead and sent them these passwords. Said, look, Galette is sort of squirrely. Go ahead and print what I'm saying about these evil pigs who have arrested me and, my side of the story. Go ahead and print these letters. I go ahead and set up my own forum. Don't print it on Galette's forum. Because essentially when it comes down to it, Galette really wants to go ahead and support the regime. He wants to go ahead and play Nazi, and I don't. I believe that this regime needs to be destroyed. It needs to be exterminated. So don't go ahead and print my letters on there. I gave him the passwords so he could go ahead and put them on my list service, Zog's War, which is the Yahoo group. So he could go ahead and put them on my webpage, so he could go ahead and put them on the forums, but not to put on Galette's forums. And what he did is he went ahead and put on Galette's forum. And then he acted all surprised. Well, Galette says that you need to go ahead and, you're going to go ahead and be banned. He gave it to Joe Johnson. who was a Klansman from Arkansas. And I've gone ahead and interviewed. I talked to Joe Johnson in February 2005 when I was at the Dillon's, you know, supermarket in Joplin. Essentially what Joe Johnson said is that everything that belonged to Joe Johnson would remain Joe Johnson's, and anything Morse Gillette went ahead and gave to Joe Johnson would be, well, guess what? Now it'd be Joe Johnson's. He made Joe Johnson senior pastor, and Joe Johnson, from what I gather, used to run a Klan. Essentially, he was such a petty, vindictive little tyrant that pretty well he had a rebellion, and pretty well everybody else in the Arkansas Klan kicked his worthless ass out. And I'm hoping that now that Billy Roper is under Tom Robb, that he won't show up to Morse Gillette's horseshit in Louisiana. He doesn't have a reason to do so because now he's supposedly under Tom Robb. And I don't see why Tom Robb would go ahead and interact with Morse Gillette. Hopefully Tom Robb will tell him, no, don't do this. So anyway, here I have, you know, Hengist. And essentially, Hengist doesn't do what he says, and then he comes up with, Pastor Butler was real nice. You just want to go ahead and exterminate all your enemies. You want to go ahead and kill them all, root and branch. Why, that's not very nice here. And I got a letter. And essentially, Hengist was not doing what I asked him to do. He was doing what I told him not to do. He wasn't posting it on my forums, which I controlled. Now, folks, I'd advocated prion poisoning ever since 1996, the practice of going ahead and feeding the diseased carcasses of deer to new deer. And, folks, I'm all together for prion poisoning, but I found out that it's not spread so much by acts of, quote, terrorism, but rather it's spread by acts of greed and stupidity by the USDA allowing these deer farms to exist. That's where it's spreading. That's the reason it's spreading. I don't think it's spread ever by, quote, people being pissed off and spreading it deliberately. Is spread by accident through stupidity. So that's why I no longer talk too much about prion poisoning. I want to continue, but I don't, you know, since I want to continue, I don't go ahead and talk because it is continuing, but it's not being spread by, quote, pissed off people. It's being spread by greedy, stupid people. Just like it's probably spread originally throughout, you know, throughout this nation, accidentally to Wisconsin, you know, yeah, to Wisconsin, and spread all over the place since then. So, essentially, since I want to continue, I don't really talk about it because I don't want the United States Department of Agriculture to shut down these deer farms, which are the equivalent of bathhouses in San Francisco for AIDS. Essentially, since it's not going to go ahead and be spread by deliberately, it might as well go ahead and be spread by greed and stupidity. But I advocated, essentially, folks, I don't have anything against this. The purpose of this church isn't, you know, and purpose of Christian Dante essentially is running around like a pack of clowns in a uniform, going ahead supporting Jews and Mamzers is not going to advance anything except stupidity. It's run by Jews and Mamzers and Asian provocateurs. Folks, I have urged people, in fact, to stay away from these people. I'm not trying to change the message of Christianity. Christianity, Dual Sudan, is very much the belief that things are going to get much, much, much worse. There's going to be an apocalypse. There's going to be a great tribulation. And for all dog running around and getting idiots like Liar Bill Mumps Nuts the Clue and getting Morris Gillette to go ahead and throw a few retards in jail on trumped up charges like this Keith Harpham building bionic backpacks, that's not going to say dog. Going ahead and putting every stupid Whigger who thinks he's a white nationalist isn't going to say dog. Zog is going, you know, Zog is destroying itself. So, folks, why in the world should you be in jail or prison doing that? But anyway, Hengist was not doing what I asked him to do, and here he was telling me is that, hey, he thought I was a maniac. And then on August 5th, here comes old, what the heck was his name? McLeod. Joe Johnson, McLeod, whatever the hell his name was. Folks, this is another thing I found out, is that people who run around under bogus names, under two or three names, that's what a criminal does. That's what a criminal does. You know, Sanchez, on August 5th, he went ahead and announced that he thought he was going to send Gillette that I should be. Oh, he was going to go ahead and ban me from the from Gillette's forum, from Gillette's webpage, anything else here. Oh, how unchristian I was, and oh, how tough he was. And essentially, if I viewed him as a traitor, well, yeah, I viewed him as a traitor. Because this was not the behavior that should be happening here. But on August 9th, Gillette, without even me getting a chance to respond, went ahead and officially kicked me out. And folks, contrary to Newton County policy, that letter went on through, and they went ahead and reported it to Cousin Randy Turner, and they reported to the Neo Show Daily News, and essentially made a big deal. And supposedly Gillette was, you know, they said, well, even though Gillette said that he didn't think Lissa was guilty, he's just going ahead and getting rid of the chomos here. So Gillette betrayed me, and Hengis betrayed me. Anyway, I got sent illegally to the Nut House. I got sent to the Nut House because I refused to accept a lawyer, any of them, public pretender or not. And here was this crooked, you know, judge who had disallowed Rossi having a, you know, legal representation in order to get the grandkids back based upon the lies. But all of a sudden he figured out, hey, I can't go ahead and force Winston to have a lawyer unless I claim he's indigent. And here's the public pretender's office pretend no. So essentially it changed to, we're going to say that Lindstedt is insane. He's insane. He's running around with half a beard. He's a maniac. He's not able to represent the town. The crooked profession went ahead and agreed. They came up with what was called what? Psychotic disorder, not otherwise specified. And essentially refused to go ahead and let anybody see the report. Even me, even though I was supposed to be the one to go ahead and see it. Kevin Lee Selby refused to let me see my own report so I could go ahead and challenge it. Say, I'm not insane. I just refused to go ahead and kiss your ass. He'd already given me 660 days for contempt of court, which was illegal as well. Folks, I have a simple, you know, here's Edgar Steele whining like a pussy about Zog fucking him over. Well, I have a simple solution to that. If you don't like the way Zog does, just skin the whole lot of them. Everything from the infant up to the retired great-great-great-grandfather regime criminal. You just go ahead and you skin the entire lot. Anybody who supports Zog, you go ahead and exterminate that population too. Folks, don't believe in letting evildoers survive, and if you support evildoers, then you're an evildoer as well. You're of the Canaanites. So, why in the world, if there's no rule of law, don't pretend there's a rule of law. Essentially, what happens is that we just have a big old fight, we have a big old civil war, and if there's only 10 million, or 5 million, or 1 million, or 100,000, 134,000 left alive at the end of it. What of it? What of it? Now, you can go ahead and tell that as somewhat of Swedish origin, I sort of have a Ragnarok or God or Damerung view of Christian identity, which is not unusual among, you know, us Northmen. But, folks, there should be no evil people left. And anybody who sides with evil people are by degree evil. It's not a matter of innocence or guilt. It's a matter of sides. And I was in sort of in touch with Cindy Steele, and I'll go ahead and get onto that here. But here's old Hengis, and he goes ahead. And when I get up to the Nut House, I'm sent there illegally. I finally get a phone card. And I call Hengis. And to my surprise, Hengis goes ahead and says that I belong up in the Nut House because I'm a sociopath. What happens is that all the stuff that happened to my children and grandchildren and, you know, myself, why, I brought it on myself for during the fight with Zog. Don't you know there's no Zog, you know, justice in Zog? If you come to the attention of Zog, you'll be screwed.
which is true. And essentially, I was in shock. And folks talked for a half hour, and I couldn't see any warmth in Hengist's voice at all. At all. And he went ahead, and essentially, it got to where I'd call him a week later, got him no better result. I got to where I wouldn't call him for months at a time. And the last time I called him was shortly after I got over at Goodwin in October 2007. And after that, when I got out, I never contacted him again. I'd see him occasionally over on Pure Silly's forum. But folks, I never contacted him anymore. Okay. Now, during the last couple of months, I was talking to, and pretty well, I'd asked Pastor John Britton, what happened to Hengist? He said, no, he said he was sick. And I got to where I didn't see him when I was spying on Pure Silly's list server. He didn't really mention much of me. I didn't really talk to him because, folks, I thought that either he was altogether a snitch or a Zogbot from day one, but I thought it was more likely he was just a scared old man who was a resident alien who relied upon having a state pension. It'd be so easy to go ahead and threaten him. Threatened to deport him back to England without a pension. A broke old man here, and there would be nothing I could do to help him. So therefore, it'd be up to you to help himself. So I thought, essentially, Hengist betrayed me because, essentially, he had to. Okay. Well, I was talking to John Knight, and John Knight is a pugnacious Irishman. You cannot go ahead and argue with a hybrid nigger being a hybrid nigger. Once a hybrid nigger digs his heels in, there's no reasoning with a hybrid nigger. And pretty well, he's of the idea that Hitler is a Jew, but Eli James is a Portuguese. There's no arguing with him. Pure Silly, right around July 31st, Mary Patricia came on. Next day, Eli James was gone. And essentially, I was dicking around Pure Silly. Well, about a week or two ago, I went ahead and John Knight came on, and he told me that, yes, found out that Hengist was dead. So, okay, where's the obituary? Oh, I can't find it here right now. So I went to Toshiba number 2, got up the Internet Explorer, typed in the Google search engine thing, Rex Thibault, comma, Olympia, comma, obituaries, and I found out that on August 23rd, 2011, first John Knight had gone ahead and written something in his obituary table. Then Pierce, Andy Anderson, Andy Bell, Andy Blanchard Mamser Blileson Anderson, who essentially hated Hengist nearly as much as he hated me. Maybe more. We called Hengist a homosexual. Said, oh, what a great scholar he was, even though he banned Hengist in 2002. And Pure Silly went ahead and gave him an obituary. But folks, when did Hengist die? And the answer is, he died September 15th, 2009. Hengist had been dead 1 year, 11 months, a week, and a day. And these people hadn't even thought of going ahead and looking for him. His real good friends had never even thought, even his enemies had not even thought of going ahead and looking him up. For nearly 2 years. And folks, that goes ahead and tells you the quality of his friends. Is that he was dead for nearly 2 years and nobody knew about it. Except maybe his brand new Siamese kitty cat. Well, folks, I went ahead and asked somebody who sort of knew him. Told him that, Hengist was dead. And pretty well, my friend told me that Martin, I went ahead and braced Hengist
back in 2006, 2007. And essentially, Hengist told me that the, you know, Immigration Naturalization Service came to Hengist as an apartment in Olympia and told him that he had better go ahead and have nothing more to do with me, better denounce me, or else they would go ahead and take him. They would deport his ass back to England without a penny, without anything, without his stipend, as he called it, or his pension from the Washington state government. And folks, I knew Newton County Zog was involved, and I knew Missouri Zog was involved, but here it is that Zog is involved. They got involved in this case here, and they did the most vicious, evil thing they could do. Go ahead and go to a white man who had lived 67, well, it wasn't quite that long, 64, 65 years in that country, had been a model citizen, even though he wasn't a citizen, was a resident alien, had gone ahead and worked for the state government, and essentially threatened him with the deportation back to Washington, you know, back to England without a penny. Folks, and here they are letting all these beaners, all letting all these Haitian niggers, letting all these Nigerians. Folks, this is an evil, evil, evil regime. And folks, none of these people who work for the Immigration Naturalization Service, they all should be exterminated. It doesn't matter whether or not they claim that they know it. Folks, it's a matter of sides. So folks, I want to go ahead and bring up it as a matter of sides, but it's also a matter of, well, it's a matter not only of sides, but it's a matter of how good are your friends. So folks, Hengist was not one of my five stalwarts. I've had one of my stalwarts die. He died in 2010, January 2010, and I think another one of my stalwarts is already dead because he's an old man. So I think two of my five stalwarts have died here. But folks, I'm going to go ahead and posthumously forgive Hengist. I'm going to forgive Rex Thibault. I'm going to go ahead and say he was a comrade. He did what he had to do. He didn't do no more. He didn't do any more betrayal of me than what he had to do. And so, I'm going to go ahead and today forgive my friend, because he is my friend. And I'm going to go ahead and play the German "Ich hat ein Kamerad," because folks, when he was moved to this country, his native country was at war with England. And from what I gather, his family came from the Guernsey Islands, these little Channel Islands, which belonged to England, but, you know, these small little islands, and that's pretty well what it was here. But, folks, the Germans were never his racial allies, and he understood that. He went ahead and stood up that Hitler was not a Jew. I mean, folks, I'm going to go ahead and play because Hengist was my comrade, and that's pretty well what this story is about. Folks, this is an evil regime, and it needs to die. You see, in Christian identity, Zog Babylon is just like the first Zog Babylon. It consists of Adamites who are subverted by the spawn of Satan, the Jews, and who go ahead and get Mamzers in. And essentially, it's pretty well Adamite against Adamite and Israelite against Israelite. But folks, when an Israelite goes ahead and destroys Yahweh's servant nation, he destroys his own blood. What happens? He's the worst traitor. He's worse than a Jew. He's worse than a Mamzer. Even though Jews are spawn of Satan and Mamzers are an abomination, a traitor. A traitor is the worst thing of all. But folks, I go ahead and I understand and I forgive my friend, Rex Thibault, a.k.a. Hengist. So folks, I'm going to take a short break. Hail victory.
Okay, folks, we're back. It's a little bit after 10:20 or so, Central Standard Time here in Granby. It's down to 55 degrees, and 2 days ago we were running the air conditioner because it got up to 96 degrees, which set a record in Granby, not set since 1956 or so, which was, again, before I was born. But I want to go ahead and cover Ashkenazi Asswipe, a.k.a. Anchorage Activist, based upon Eli James showing up at this Jeff Shoup thing on September 2nd, I think it was September 2nd of this month, at his West Allis, at this West Allis, Wisconsin rally staged by the NSM, National Socialist Movement, under Jeff Shoup. Now, Jeff Shoup is himself a rather dodgy character. Last year, he was in Knoxville, I believe it was, and he had a big old rally, and this year was his one big rally of the year, where he shoots his wad, and Jeff Shoup runs around in Nazi uniform. He has a bunch of creatards, a bunch of Anglo mestizos running around, and last year he had a Satanist named, what the heck was his name, Clifton Harrington or something like that. Well, this year, he has a Jew behind him. A Jew running around, rocking around, Eli James. And Eli James is a good little Jew, you know, pretending to be Christian identity, has been kicked out of the Klan. Kicked out of the Klan even about a month or so before I ended up finding, through the agency of Brian Real, Ford Manzer, found out who he was. And we're getting to pretty well a year with a big old blow up with Eli James. But pretty well, here comes Ashkenazi Asswipe, as I call him, or Anchorage Activist. And I think the character is a Zogbot. I think the character is somebody who goes ahead and takes very well the news, you know, by the mainstream media, and goes ahead and spins it. Now, Ashkenazi Asswipe's idea is that Trader Glenn Miller and Wiggerswill Williams, but he's sort of gotten away from Wiggerswill. Oh, by the way, Harold Covington, about a day or so ago, in an article, you know, not with a bang, but with a fart, went ahead and told the story as to, essentially, it seems like little Wiggerswill's little bogus lawsuit. It's been, what, 15 years? At least 14 years? And from what I gather, Wiggerswill is no longer, I guess after 7 years, he didn't go ahead and renew the judgment. So from my guess, probably Wiggerswill didn't renew the, you know, bogus judgment that he got. He was probably told that essentially, since it was a bogus judgment, if it came time to actually collect any money from it, that essentially he wouldn't get anything. And Harold Covington said that he got this money, which would have been taken away from him in December 2005, including his rent money. He ended up going ahead and getting a fraction back after the Bank of America and the, essentially the lawyers had, you know, dipped their beaks, as they call it. Essentially, they took their little commission out. And he says the Wiggerswill hasn't gotten anything from it. So Covington believes that pretty well his persecution is pretty well at an end. And I would say probably what ended up happening is that, you know, probably the crooked judge is long since dead. Anybody who has any interest in essentially Covington staying out of North Carolina is pretty well dead. Covington ain't going to go back to North Carolina in any case, which was his home. And, folks, I think that pretty well it's just over with on that. And that's what Covington was pretty well gloating about. From what I gather, they got the money because, hey, there's no more judgment against them. And Wiggerswill, he's reduced to essentially gloating and pissing and moaning about how his, you know, view of, well, Pierce was the best here. Folks, now, I didn't really have a chance to listen to more than about 15 minutes of Earl Covington. He was talking about Kevin Hartman. I didn't have a chance to go ahead and listen. I often like listening to a show. Now, we used to give it out Tuesday or Wednesday. I had a chance to listen to it and then comment on tonight's show. I don't really have much time. I think he's probably right not to go ahead and talk, you know, and certainly not talk bad about our movement, Prisoners of War. Folks, in the case of Mr. Hartham, I think what he should have done is that, you know, I mean, if you are arrested, you know, for anything, just show nothing but hatred and contempt and a desire to exterminate the pigs and their family. Folks, I used to freak them pigs out here by showing my picture of Iron Felix Dzerzhinsky, just though they're calmly looking, and the pigs said, look, who's that? And they thought it was a big Nazi, you know, because I'm a big Nazi. I said, no, that's Iron Felix Dzerzhinsky, the very first head of the Russian, what became the Russian KGB. And what he would do is he figured out that he was Lenin's policeman. He actually was the Bolshevik that served the most time in Siberia. He served 20 years. He was going to get another dozen or so years when the Russian Revolution broke out. And Lenin wanted somebody who knew something about police procedure. Well, Iron Felix knew all about it. Okay, folks, getting back to old Iron Felix. Now, Sarg Manzer and Visser claims that Iron Felix was a Jew. Well, folks, he wasn't altogether a white man. He was a, you know, he was one of these Tatars or Uhlans. You know, he was imported because these Cossacks, which weren't altogether white, had a little bit of Mongol or Tartar in them, were very good cavalrymen, and they were imported into Poland and Lithuania in order to go ahead and act as Uhlan cavalry, i.e. cavalry with a lance and all this sort of thing. The Germans had some Uhlan cavalry in World War I, and they had cavalry in World War II. The Florian Guard Division was cavalry. And essentially, a horse was pretty well valuable for going ahead and going places. We got to understand is that while the Germans had panzer units, most of the units were essentially leg infantry, with some trucks to move the artillery, to move their supplies and all the rest of it, but it wasn't mechanized like the American army was. The other army, I mean, the German army, in many cases, was a horse-drawn army in many cases. And certainly the Polish army, you know, the Polish and Lithuanian and the rest of the armies were too. So Felix Dzerzhinsky wasn't a Jew. But he understood, like anybody who's gone ahead and dealt with pigs, that there's no such thing as a decent pig or a decent lawyer. Essentially, all they are is criminals. So, you don't, and this is what I get from Wiggers and Manzers and pigs and the rest here. They assume that when Zog falls apart, that essentially whoever comes to power is going to want to prove to their criminal satisfaction that they are guilty. Well, Iron Felix had a better idea. Essentially, he'd round them up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and torture them until they confessed. And then after he'd pretty well wrung them out, he would go ahead and, usually in many cases, shove them naked and handcuffed into the mob of the people they'd fucked over, and that mob would tear them to pieces. He'd send their family to a death camp. Now, there were no great purges during Iron Felix's day. Essentially, like he told Lenin, the whole purpose of going ahead and getting control of an empire across 8 time zones of 100 million or so people is that you go ahead and exterminate the 1% or so that is the rulers and the rest of the population without any leadership will essentially go with the new leadership. And what Iron Felix did was he exterminated everyone from the local village pig who served the Tsar up to the Tsar himself. And he did a very efficient job of it in 19 months. He was part of the Cheka, the All-High Soviet Commission to combat counter-revolution and sabotage. And when he got done, yes, there were some white officers and there was a Russian Civil War, but essentially there was no civil regime to go ahead and bring it back to him. Folks, that is pretty well my solution, is that, folks, if I go ahead and see some of these pigs that went ahead and knocked out my teeth, I don't need to know the pig is guilty. I know damn well the pig went ahead and broke out my teeth. I know the rest of the pigs covered up for him. So they're as guilty as he is. And why in the world do you leave baby criminals alive to go ahead and destroy you and go ahead and form a counter-revolution? Folks, when Hengist went ahead and said that I had pretty well, valued Yahweh's will and my work above my grandchildren, that hurt because it was somewhat true. Folks, in many cases, I sacrificed my grandchildren. And they weren't special grandchildren, but they were special to me. I sacrificed my grandchildren so that, essentially, everybody who goes ahead and supports this current regime, supports going ahead and messing with white families, so that they and their families and their children could go ahead and be destroyed. You have Obagenda, Bender, Pisser, Pusser, Possum, and you have Visser whining like pussies about, oh, ain't Visser's children white? Well, no, they're not white. They may be blonde-haired, but they're dark-eyed. They're little Mamsers. And when they go ahead and say, well, it doesn't say in the Bible that you can go ahead and skin alive the children of regime criminals. Well, folks, the Bible doesn't say anything about how I deal with rats to get in my corn crib. It doesn't say I can't skin alive a rat in order to go ahead and scare the rest of the rats out of getting into my corn crib, out of chewing out of my corn, and then pissing on the rest like rats do, and getting the rat to go ahead and go out to the field and eat weed seeds. No. But folks, if it was necessary for me to go ahead and skin alive a rat and little rat babies in order to go ahead and encourage the rest of the rats to go out to the field where they belong, well, the Bible doesn't say not to do that. So how more to go ahead and deal with the two-legged rats that are out to go ahead and destroy our race, our civilization, our very way of life, and our families? Folks, I don't bother with telling regime criminals that they got to go ahead and confess. And there's a time I've gone ahead and talked about the crimes of the pigs to the very people, like the city council quitters, who went ahead and sicked those pigs on them. I have, you know, little pigs. Yes, I'm guilty. No, don't show my video picture. As if what happens, I have to prove, according to the Constitution Bill of Goods, exactly their crimes when they themselves have not gone ahead and obeyed any rules. When they themselves are run wild. Folks, pig, I hope that some of you end up being tough enough to last for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 days of skinning before you go ahead and betray, your family. Folks, it don't matter how long or how much screaming you have to do before you sign a confession. As I look at it, if you're a traitor, you're a traitor. And those who spawned you are traitors as well, because you turned out to be a traitor. Folks, you have diseased animals, and you have to deal with diseased animals. And folks, there's not enough good blood left to go ahead and destroy essentially a total cancerous body. There's nothing left. In fact, the great tribulation is to go ahead and destroy all this cancer, all the Mansers, all the Jews, and all the rest. So here you have Ashkenazi asswipe yapping about, on September 9th, 2011, I turned into Yahweh's Covenant People Talk Show radio program hosted by Christian Identity Pastor Eli James. During the program, he interviewed Cindy Steele, the wife of political prisoner Edgar Steele, allowing her ample time to tell her story. Cindy Steele remains absolutely committed to the notion that Edgar is innocent of the charges upon which he is convicted. The audio of the 65-minute interview is embedded below, and I went ahead and gave the link here. Folks, Eli James has a talk show program. Why does he have a talk show program? He has three of them. Brian Real has a talk show program. Finkelstein has a talk show program. But folks, both Brian Real and Eli James went ahead, and just like Jews do, they went ahead and whined and bitched and pissed and moaned to talk show to go ahead and take me out. Take down my program. And these criminals did it. Now, folks, what do you do with someone who goes ahead and destroys the basis of white civilization, i.e. free speech? Folks, it's just like when Maggie and Clint and Andy Anderson and Richard Nimoy took over this Yahoo group. First thing they did was go ahead and censor someone. Folks, anyone who goes ahead and censors a white nationalist, essentially, you ought to go ahead and poke out all their eyes. You ought to go ahead and pull out their tongue, cut off their ears, cut off their heads, cut off their nuts, skin them alive, and let them go ahead without any censors, thinking about the evils that they've done. And you do that to their entire families. Folks, there is no excuse for censorship. If you want to practice censorship, and your censorship attempt does not work, then essentially, you're not going to be heard of or seen again. That is why, in ancient Israel, anybody who went ahead and supported the ancient regime in any way, they and their entire family was eaten by the dogs and eaten by the birds. Folks, Yahweh doesn't put up with anybody going ahead and censoring free speech. Because in a free society, in a white society, since every single man is responsible for saving that race's regime, essentially, since he has to go ahead and give his blood and treasure, he has a right to go ahead and decide whether or not that regime will go ahead and go to war. And if any king usurps that position and that king is overthrown, then guess what? He deserves whatever he gets, him and his entire regime. But folks, it's just the nature of a Jew. It's the nature of a Mamzer. It's the nature of a traitor to go ahead and try to silence those who speak out in warning. And that's exactly what Eli James does. Now, Cindy Steele, I went ahead and got in contact with her, and she got in contact with me. And pretty well, I told her that, yes, I've heard a number of her interviews about how Edgar Steele is innocent, and as far as I'm concerned, he is innocent. And I've seen over on the NNF, you have Hadding the Meerkat, a.k.a. Scott Davis Bidell, shitting on him. You have Don Pauly shitting on him. Hell, you even have April Gay sort of shitting on him, you know, through Don Pauly. I mean, shoot. If old Edgar was listening to this, he'd sort of know that some of his, quote, friends have turned out to be traitors. And for no damn good reason. I don't think April is being, you know, being threatened with deportation or losing, you know, losing her pension. She goes ahead and she does this stupid shit simply because she's an ignorant twat who just thinks of nobody but herself. But I went ahead and, you know, said, hey, talk it over with your husband. Essentially, what I would want to do is have a debate with Edgar Steele. And my debate is, what does the house of Naboth owe the house of Ahab? I believe that the house of Naboth owes extermination to the house of Ahab. Skinning alive, blinding, gelding, everything, and anybody who supports the house of Ahab. Edgar Steele, of course, I think still cannot get over the fact that he used to be part of the house of Ahab. And now he's been screwed up and all he has is a whine. And I've not got back, you know, Cindy Steele's not got back with me. Essentially, I want to have a debate that we had back, you know, that I had, at least one-sided with Edgar Steele, to where, hey, I didn't think that much of this book because I thought it was just simply a whigger whimperer book that will go ahead and get nowhere, okay? But going on, yet Eli James has made the tracksuit not only claim that James used the name Joseph November, but also claims that James is a Jew. Among the most prominent critics are Pastor Martin Lindstedt and Zogboss. Well, folks, Zogboss is nothing other than Finkelschini's little thing. It was first used against me and, you know, Russ Walker. Another pastor, Clifton Amheiser. Well, Amheiser loves Mamzers. Amheiser loves Jews. He likes Finkelschini. He likes Brian Reel. So, pretty well, they're claiming that, essentially, they accuse Eli James of universalism, which means salvation would be extended to non-whites. Well, folks, that's exactly what Eli James is proposing. That salvation should be extended to non-whites. Why does he go ahead and come up with this shit? Because he's a Jew. Eli James doesn't understand anything about Christian identity. Even though he's been trying to sneak around in 25 years, he goes ahead and he reads a little bit. But folks, real Christian identity essentially is not about running around, showing up behind retards and creatards and mamzers in uniform playing Nazi who would be locked up. Essentially, real Christian identity says is that there is going to be a great tribulation and that pretty well it's not a matter of anything you can do to save it. In fact, you should not want to be saving Zog. What you should be like, even if you are as unrighteous as Lot and you got the position, you should run away from Zog Babylon. You should run away from Sodom and Gomorrah. And going ahead and committing idolatry by going ahead and looking back over your shoulder, Yahweh should go ahead and do even more to you. Worse things than just turning you into a pillar of salt. Very much. I mean, from what I gather, I think I'm the only one real Christian identity pastor who's saying what Christian identity is about. Essentially, it's a racial religion that there is no hope. But what you should do is make sure, if you want to personally save yourself, both in this life and in the next, get close with Yahweh. First thing you should do. And you cannot go ahead and do it by juicy fruit, like Dan Johns, another Jew mamzer, wants you to do. In fact, in this thing, Eli James goes ahead and talks about how Bradley Jenkins and a few other people, August Quest, wanted to beat Dan Johns because they thought he was a Jew. And folks, I thought he was a Cherokee Indian from Georgia, but from what I gather, his family comes from Jew Jersey. Same way Brian Reel, same way Chicken Mariani, same way, you know, Cousin Ray, Chicken Mariani, same way with Dickie Barrett. Folks, like they used to say, is there anything good comes out of the gallery? Well, folks, there is nothing good that comes out of Jew Jersey. Not Jersey produce, a.k.a. garbage. And not garbage people, not Jews, and the rest of these critters who go ahead and come out and stink up the rest of the nation. No. Here comes Dan Johns, and he believes that, oh, he goes ahead and he talks, he just yaps about, oh, how we're Christian Israel. These Jews are Christian Israel. A manzer like Brian Reel is Christian Israel. The critter's a nigger. Please. Nigger, please. But he goes on, and, you know, Eli James' response was something pertinent on the Christian Identity Forum, a.k.a. Two and a Half Mamzers, by another mamzer, Pisser's Poster Possum, who believes he can go ahead and take down the genuine by hiding somewhere. And, folks, that's not going to happen. Not going to happen at all. Eli James says, one of Zog's favorite tactics against true Israel is prop up phony pastors. Well, folks, Eli James has been propped up. How have I been propped up? They usually come out of the prison system. Well, tell me about it. How about Alan Truett? How about Morris Gorette? I have had much personal experience with the subversives among us, as I've related in an early article posted on my website. It goes ahead and to anglosaxonisrael.com/site/node111, where essentially they're talking about Bradley Jenkins and August Christ. Now, I've sort of gotten on Facebook because Bradley Jenkins has had enough of Mo Gullet, and he's over on Harold Covington's Northwest Imperative. And I'm not saying Bradley Jenkins is one of my friends, although I went ahead and friended him on Facebook. But from what I gather, August Christ, although I've talked about August Christ, and he is a very flawed person, now he no longer has any feet, and he's being screwed by Zog. And no, I don't have a high opinion of old Augie, but at least Augie is white. Augie is, well, if not the general, you know, article religiously, at least he's a genuine article racially. And they wanted to beat Dan John's ass. And then Eli James got in there and sort of prevented them from beating his ass, you know. And that's why Eli James is dangerous, because he has some Esau-ic qualities as opposed to Finkelstein, who has absolutely none. Okay? But here he was in November 2010, and here's Ashkenazi asswipe yapping the shit about what happened in January and February of 2011. So he says, numerous people have called me a Jew or man's or worse, but none of them be able to prove any of their charges against me. Folks, here is a Jew essentially acting just like a pig, to where you cannot prove the charges against me to my satisfaction. Folks, it's up to me. No Jew would dare impersonate an Israelite. No Jew would. Essentially, the Jew would say, hey, it's better to live in Kazakhstan. Not Kazakhstan upon the, you know, Jordan, but rather Kazakhstan, oh, in the Caucasus or something like that. Living on goat pizzle and sheep dung, rather than to go ahead and live in the Golden Horn and personate an Israelite among the Israelites.
folks, I owe Eli James nothing. I already know that he's an evil Jew. But what I did on mine is I went ahead and posted, you know, he went on and said, those who know me personally know I do my best to be a guileless Israelite. Well, maybe you do your best to impersonate one. I do not claim to be perfect, but neither do I actively go out to make trouble for others. Sadly, we have another impersonator trying to weasel his way in. Well, Ashkenazi Aswad didn't have any of that, but I went ahead and put in links to where on November 28th, Brian Real and him were talking about taking down NIMBUSTERS and calling the FBI. And I went ahead and put a link to where Eli James admitted that he took down my web pages to William Fink and essentially acted like he was in charge of doing prosecutions against me. Eli James has gone ahead and, you know, snitched me and Pastor John Britton and Russ Walker out to the FBI as much as they would listen. Folks, Eli James is not only a dirty Jew, he's a Zogbot. And Ray Larson figured that out. Then you go ahead, and in the Chris Virginia, Dave, Whiny Dave from PUK denies that Eli James is a Jew. Well, folks, this was just before he got kicked out the second time from Finkelschini's for revealing that Finkelschini was a Jersey City Jew boy who went ahead and murdered a Puerto Rican prisoner and lied about it and got 12 and a half years. Then you got another Christian identity pastor, Jeremy Visser, who also denies Eli James is a Jew. Yes, he does. He's trying to suck up to Eli James. He's trying to suck up to Finkelschini. So I went ahead and put a few more little links about showing that Visser is a Mamza. In the same thread, Pastor William Fink provides a plausible explanation of why Pastor James may have used the name Joseph November. Well, I got a real good name. I mean, he did use the term Joseph November. And before that, he was known as Joseph Cutts. And no one knows what the hell his name was before that. In my trolling, I've kept on saying, why does Eli James look so much like a Chicago Sephardic Jew? And I go ahead and show this picture of three Jews, one of them being Ron Emanuel, another one who looks exactly like Eli James. And here's Alan Truett. Oh, you put a picture of a Muslim. I said, no, you dumb fuck. Eli James put up that picture. He don't look like a Muslim. He looks like this Jew with Rahm Emanuel. There's a reason why Eli James looks like a Chicago Sephardic Jew. The other Sephardic Jew looks like Eli James' twin brother, probably is a nephew who got squeezed out of Rachel Cutts Goldstein's pussy here a number of years ago. It wouldn't surprise me if that Jew rabbi, open Jew rabbi, is a nephew of Eli James. Eli James lives in Chicago. So does these three Jews, including Rahm Emanuel, who's now the mayor of Chicago. There's a reason a Jew looks like a Jew. Even way back in Jeremiah's time, they were talking about how the show of their countenance would testify against them. Folks, they have the mark of Cain. The reason they look like a Jew is because they are a Jew. Can't any of you people figure it out? But you're giving eyeballs, but here you are coming up with the explanation. Well, Finkelschini, on September 29th, went ahead and said, you know, said they wasn't. But folks, here's Ashkenazi Asswipe, hasn't seemed to figure it out that Zogbots.com is owned by Finkelschini. Now on Zogbots.com, Finkelschini is indeed claiming that Eli James is a Jew. So what they do is they claim that's over doctrinal issues. Well, yes, it is over doctrinal issues, among other things. Here you have a Jew going ahead and saying that Jews are responsible for Satan, but earlier, which caused the break between Finkelschini, is he said that some Canaanite Jews could be saved. Now he's back saying, no, they can't be saved. But let me just tell you what the, you know, what the aid, you know, what the thing is, what the stock and trade is. You have a bunch of Jews claiming the Jews are a spawn of Satan, but at the same time, well, we shouldn't go ahead and exterminate all the Jews. What happens is that you can't go ahead and judge somebody on the fact that their daddy or mommy was a Jew. Well, folks, that may be very well universalism. Essentially, Eli James and William Finkelschini and Brian Real, being Mamzers and being originally Jews who have been sort of like Merino Jews, who have gotten used to going ahead and infiltrating the Roman Catholic Church. And folks, if I have to go ahead and say that I'm anything, I would say that I am the head of the dual seedline Christian Identity Inquisition. And my job, just like the Roman Catholic Church and the Spanish Inquisition, is to go ahead and ferret out these dirty Jews pretending to be of the body of Christ. Now, the Roman Catholic Church is not of the body of Christ. This man's a friendly. But folks, if I had to go ahead and name myself or name my function, it would be dual seed like Christian Identity Inquisitor, because folks, I'm out to go ahead and run out Jews, I'm out to run out Mamzers, I'm out to run out Zogbots and Snitches and Bell Priests. And that's exactly what Eli James is. That's exactly what Eli James is. He's a Maronite Jew, skilled in trying to go ahead and bring about Roman Catholicism, which was funded from the old Hittite religion, and from that, from the Nimrod religion of Nimrod, Semiramis, and Neo-Nimrod. Now what happened, Shem killed Nimrod, and Esau went ahead and killed Neo-Nimrod. And Jacob went ahead and killed those who were on Esau's ass for him going ahead and doing that. But folks, Eli James is indeed a universalist. He is a revisionist. He is Ashkenazi asswipe who doesn't know a damn thing. But folks, here are the comments. And folks, you had comments before that about that here. And Jeff Shoup, you know, he said, well, would Jeff Shoup have a Jew? And he points out, Jeff Shoup had a David Plessman staying behind him. He was a top NSM member. He's an admitted Jew. Mike Blevins, well, he sure looked like a Jew. Well, yeah, Von Blevins sure as hell does look like a Jew. That's why I've said this, I think he's a Jew Mamzer, because he sure as hell does look like a Jew. Shoup stands with devil worshippers. Cliff Harrington, sex offenders, John Snyder, Zog provocateurs like Al Turner. Shoup doesn't know, and Shoup doesn't give a shit as to who, you know, as to who it is. And you have two or three other things here. This another one said, could you please, and you know, verify the facts before you publish them? Pastor Fink has disowned Eli James as a Jew. Well, first of all, Fink is not a pastor. He's just another Jersey City Jew boy, and, you know, quote, Greek scholar, who went ahead and got into Christian Identity. Visser himself is very well known informant and respected as Jew. Well, I believe Visser is indeed a informant. I believe he's not really suspected as Jew, but he's rather a Mamzer. And Visser's going ahead and admit. Folks, Visser's lying, back to lying that, you know, essentially that picture, that Zuqua.com picture of old blubber lips, Brian Real, slurping down on a beer or an energy drink or whatever the hell he was blurping down, was a nigger. And you had this Rio D. Manzarero, you know, song here. Now he's claiming that I went ahead and produced some beaner named Rodriguez or something here, which is nonsense. I mean, here's a picture of Brian Real. Folks, Brian Real in his latest DMCA complaints has admitted these pictures, even though they may be parodies, are of him. That they are of him, therefore, he's the only one who could possibly have a copyright to it. Well, no. Facebook and Zuqua.com claim the copyright. Also, Eli's real name is Joseph Putz. Well, I think it's really Cuts, but which is very Jewish. Plus, he looks like a Jew to everyone. Sorry to say that. Folks, somebody from Ray Larson, the previous one, went ahead and said is that they, you know, seen old Eli James trying to go ahead and screw some little 13-year-old white girl. Pretty well, they was an informant. That's why he was kicked out of Ray Larson's clan. Folks, I don't know that, but I do know he's a Jew. I know he's a Jew, and essentially Ray Larson figured it out about 6 weeks before I figured it out, and I didn't say, you know, I mean, I was looking at Eli James, and I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, and no matter how long, I mean, he didn't pass the 30-second test of Harold Covington. And after Halloween, when he tried to go ahead and protect Brian Real, I knew the critter was a Jew. Yeah, he's trying to suck up. Okay, I'm looking back at the chat here. Essentially, the chat has sort of gone on without me.
In any case, what you have is that you have a bunch of tards acting like tards. That's essentially exactly what the hell you have. That's all you have. So, let me go ahead and continue. It looks like I got... Well, folks, I think I've ranted and railed about Eli James. Folks, you have people like Ashkenazi Asswipe continuing to go ahead and allow Jews, and he doesn't have a damn thing what he says. And, folks, if he went ahead and actually looked at what the hell was going on Zogbots, he can go ahead and figure it out here. But, folks, our wonderful bowel movement, including Cindy Steele, she wants to go ahead, and they still want to pretend that Zog has made a horrible mistake in persecuting Edgar Steele. I went ahead and told her number thing. It says, stop feeding Polly the Zog parent over on the NNF, because essentially he's shitting all over Edgar. Yes, I have had some. I've had a good deal of disagreements with Edgar Steele since 2004, and I have criticized him, and yes, I've called him the Wigger Whimperer. Because, folks, what Edgar wants is way too late. It's way past the time of reforming Zog. Once you go ahead and overthrow Zog, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with 130 million Uyghurs? What the hell are you going to do with 170 million Mamzers? What are you going to do with a bunch of Jews? What are you going to do? How can 10 million whites keep a lid on 130 million Uyghurs and 170 million Muds any more than any one white man can go ahead and keep 13 Uyghurs who want to die and 17 Muds who want to go ahead and make sure the white race dies, run by Jews? How can anybody keep a lid on that? And the answer is they can't. Nature must go ahead and run its course. And dual feedline Christian identity is not about going ahead and changing politically, Zog. It's not about anymore forming a clan to keep the niggers in check, running around in white robes with a bunch of old geezers. It's not about that anymore. It's not about going ahead and running for public office here to go ahead and deny an increase in food stamps to the niggers. It's not about running around having political solutions. Rather, what it is about letting nature take its course and this collapse go ahead and in this collapse exterminating through civil war, through famine, through the four horsemen of apocalypse, which contrary to Eli James and contrary to Finkelschini, is not Gaius Marius, Sulla Felix Cornelius, or Julius Caesar, who had their heyday 105 to 150 years before John of Patmos wrote the Book of Revelations. Folks, all this crap that they're coming up with is just simply crap. That's all it is. And that's all it'll ever be. And folks, going ahead and believing crap, believing lies, essentially means that you will go ahead and have trouble. Okay, someone's saying about Billy Roper's adventures at the Tea Party. Well, Billy Roper went ahead and sent me probably the last issue of his white nationalist little newsletter. It's sort of pathetic. And folks, I do need to go ahead and write Billy Roper asking him, please, 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 please. Now it's under Tom Robb's supervision. Don't go down to Morris Gillette's horseshit. Suck any Jew cock with Eli James. Please don't do this shit. Please. I don't like Tom Robb. He's a one seed liner. He likes Clint Downey, and her little worthless meerkat. But shit, at least Tom Robb don't get himself or his followers in prison. Tom Robb is not somebody I'm going to follow, but I don't mind you following him. Just stay away from Morris Gillette and the rest of the Zog Boss. I mean, shoot.
I really don't have any great love for Tom Robb, but on the other hand, I don't really have any great hatred against Tom Robb. I mean, especially if you want to have some little Christian identity light and little Klan fun, and you have the money to pay for it, I mean, shit, it's better than giving it to Jim and Tammy Baker. It's a hell of a lot better than giving it to, you know, Bill Finkelschini and Eli or James here. I mean, at least Tom Robb is white. At least Tom Robb don't get his tards in trouble like Gillette does, like Truett does. You know, at least Tom Robb isn't sucking a lot of Jew dick. So, hey, you know, I mean, it's at least an improvement here. She went with Tom Robb. But I'll go ahead and look at what, me and Morris Gillette here. I think you went ahead and suggested that Facebook friend, Morris Gillette. Now, as I remember, I think you said you've got to be kidding. Okay? All right. Well, you go ahead and you befriend him if you want, Frank Wigger. Folks, me and Mo Gullet, I mean, I already went ahead and saved $500,000. His trust fund for $500,000. He didn't have the decency to thank me or John Britton for doing it. So I think I've done enough favors for Mo Gullet here. I went ahead and started a letter writing campaign for when he was in the West Monroe City Jail, and essentially he's whining like a pussy here that supposedly, you know, I sicked the federal prosecutor on him, even though I did no such thing. I mean, essentially, Mo Gullet is just a criminal who, I don't know if he, you know, I mean, he's probably lying about, you know, having three FBI agents or anything like that, but I will notice. Why did he ask him, how come Lindstedt isn't here? How come Lindstedt isn't here as my co-conspirator? The answer is there was no conspiracy. Essentially, I was talking to this little weasel, this little assistant prosecuting attorney weasel named Gillespie, and I did not claim to be a Phineas Priest. In fact, I tell people that anybody who claims to be a Phineas Priest is a lying mamzer, like Jeremy Visser, because I do believe there is a genuine Phineas Priest. But, folks, if you are a genuine Phineas Priest, you're not going to say you're a Phineas Priest. If you're a lying mamzer like Jeremy Visser, you're going to claim to be a Phineas Priest, which is stupid. The real Phineas Priest might want to go ahead and skin you for, you know, such presumption. My daddy never told me I was, you know, related to Phineas. I might be, I don't know, but I've never been told I'm a Phineas Priest by my dad. Well, my dad and Lynn says we're just a bunch of Swedish peasants who, you know, lived on the plains of eastern and southern Central South Dakota, and you know, essentially before that, they lived in southwest Sweden around the Helsingborg area, you know, which is across from Helsingborg on the Danish side. So what happens is that I've never been told by anybody who should know that I'm a Phineas Priest. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm not a Phineas Priest, and I never said I was a Phineas Priest. I know better than say stupid shit. If you say you're a Phineas Priest, you might as well say you're a lying mamzer. Okay, and I'm not a lying mamzer. You know, my family really was just really nothing more than just a bunch of artisans and farmers. You know, that's pretty well what my, you know, I mean, I sort of think Yahweh went ahead and made me smart or made me the way I am because, hey, he has in mind for me to do what I need and what needs to be done. So, no, I'm not no Phineas Priest. I never said I was. But folks, Gillette is lying. You know, Gillette's a lying sack of shit. And I'm not going to go ahead and, you know, I need to go ahead and notify Billy Roper of that. Please, whatever you do, you know, I'm not too crazy about Tom Robb. But, you know, shit, he's a lot better than most Gillette. You know, ask Tom Robb to say, no, you can't go down there. You know what I mean? Because you're under Tom Robb's control. And, folks, Billy Roper is now, she's Christian Identity, and I didn't have anything to do with it, okay? I think his girlfriend, or his wife, or whatever, you know, I think as a woman had far more to do with pretty well sucking Christian, you know, Billy Rope into Christian identity, you know, than anything I do. Because folks, I mean, most above ground Christian identity is just nothing but, you know, wall to wall Mamzers and, you know, Mamzers like, you know, and Jews like Eli James and Bill Fink, Mamzers like Jeremy Visser and Dan Johns, or Zogbots like Morris Gillette, who don't give a crap about how many Mamzers they bring and how many Jews they bring in Christian identity. You know, at least Tom Robb at least has some standards. So, you know, I mean, you know, Billy wanted to go ahead and get somebody who would essentially tell him what to do. Well, I guess Tom Robb is about really the only one left here. You know, old Arnold Murray. Arnold Murray is pretty well about the softest spoken of the dual seedliners, and he doesn't call them Jews. He calls them Kenites. And Pete Peters was the most hardcore of the one seedliners, and you know, he didn't call them. You know, he called them Jews, but he wouldn't call, you know. Anyway, Tom Robb bought Michael Burks. Yeah, he did that, didn't he? Yeah, he did. Well, Tom Robb, I mean, there's this Christian identity character you don't think much Mike Hallamore for what too much for his money, you know, for his AIT course. Too much money for his AIT course. Don't think much of Tom Robb, but he's trying to run his own Klan business. And folks, that's none of my affair because I'm not trying to run any Klan, much less for fun or for profit. So, yeah, I mean, I looked at Michael Burks, and Michael Burks is a character who, I mean, folks, you would not want a critter that looks like Michael Burks breeding. He looks like a mini Neanderthal is what he looks like. I mean, he looks like an Anglo-Mestizo Neanderthal. There's some people who claim that Jews have Neanderthal DNA, and they've been fighting against Cro-Magnon / Aryan man ever since, because the Aryan man went ahead and killed a lot of Neanderthals. And, you know, essentially Michael Burks would go ahead and be a minor exhibit for that hypothesis. You know what I mean? Well, maybe you do. Okay. Well, Kanan was a little Jew boy. You know what I mean? Okay. Well, yeah, Jews don't have names here, although they do, you know, I have seen, you know, I mean, you get the way you have Jew names here. Old Finkelschini, I mean, he's sort of wondering out loud how come there's so many Jews named Fink. Okay. Yeah, more Michael Burks, well, he looks more like one of the guy, you know, he looks like more one of the scrubs from one of these Geico commercials here. You know, and I'm not talking about the little green lizard. All right, folks, I'm going to go ahead and take a break. So, hail victory, and I'll probably be back for the last segment of the Movement Turd.
They had passwords that only the initiated understood, and signals which meant everything or nothing. A night bird was a messenger, a day bird a courier. They knew the names or the numbers of the pursuing regiments from the shoes of their horses and told the nationality of troops by the manner in which twigs were broken along the line of march. They could see in the night like other beasts of prey and hunted most when it was darkest. No matter for a road, so only there was a trail, and no matter for a trail, so only there was a direction. When there was no wind and when the clouds hid the sun or the stars, they traveled by the moss on the trees. In the daytime, they looked for this moss with their eyes, and in the nighttime, with their hands. Living much in fastnesses, they were rarely surprised, while solitude developed and made more acute every instinct of self-preservation. By degrees, a caste began to be established, free to come and go, bound by no enlistment and dependent upon no bounty, hunted by one nation and apologized for by the other. Merciful rarely, and merciless often, loving liberty in a blind, idolatrous fashion, half reality, half superstition, holding no crime so bad as that of cowardice, courteous to women amid all the wild license of pillage and slaughter, steadfast as faith to comradeship or friend, too serious for boastfulness, and too near the unknown to deceive themselves with vanity. Starved today and feasted tomorrow, victorious in this combat or decimated in that, receiving no quarter and giving none. Astonishing pursuers by the swiftness of a retreat, or shocking humanity by the completeness of a massacre. A sable fringe on the blood-red garments of civil war, or a perpetual cutthroat in ambush in the midst of contending Christians. Is it any wonder that in time the guerrilla organization came to have captains and leaders and discipline and a language and fastnesses and hiding places and a terrible banner unknown to the winds? Thank you.
Okay, folks, I'm looking at the chat here, which is interesting. It's gotten away from the movement turd stuff, actually, to the Bible. And, folks, what we got to understand is that Moses was a prince of Egypt. He had an Ethiopian wife, and there have been questions of whether, you know, Ethiopia was full of niggers at the time. I believe that you had some white people living in Ethiopia, because it was also known as Kush, although you had a Hindu Kush as well. Although Kush, from what I gather, was indeed a nigger. You know, from, you know, Ham screwing of this, Ham was a total wigger. He had a Jew wife named, you know, Canaanite wife known as Naamah, who was Tubal Cain's sister, which caused confusion because Noah's wife was also called Naamah. And there's been a good deal of confusion. You have some people claiming that by going ahead and seeing Noah's nakedness, essentially it meant that Ham had sex with Naamah, who was his mother, as opposed to Naamah, Tubal Cain's sister, the sort of Jewess who gave birth to a bastard named Cain, and that's why Canaan was cursed. And you will have that interpretation of Genesis chapter 9. And folks, I have had, I've gone ahead and looked several times at Genesis chapter 9. I'm not too thrilled about hearing how Japheth would dwell in Shem's tents, as well as these dirty Jews who would be bondsmen, but who now seem to be our masters. And in many cases, I gotta say that there's, in many cases in the Bible, there's a lot of things that I do not know. Folks, my ability in Christian identity has been in pretty well weeding out Jews and weeding out Mamzers, and in many cases acting like a dual seed line Christian identity inquisition, to where, unlike Emma Heiser and unlike Willie Martin, well, Willie Martin understood that Bertrand Comparé was pretty much as good as was ever going to get, and he would go ahead and expand on Bertrand Comparé, whereas Emma Heiser essentially has let his inferiority complex to Comparé go ahead and allow him to bring in Jews like Eli James and Bill Fink and, Mamzers like Brian Real, and try to go ahead and change the Comparéan worldview. Folks, I've never found it difficult to say about some things in the Bible that I don't know. But the reason in many cases we bring it up, because I talk about Zog Babylon, the third and the final. And this is Zog Babylon, the third and the final, because we're coming into the final days. Satan has not been put in a pit, just like, Eli James and Finkelschini, with their papist, preterism horseshit, like to go ahead and point out. Most prophecy, 90% of prophecy, just like the Worldwide Church of God, has not been fulfilled. We're coming into some very, very, very bad times ahead. We're coming into the Great Tribulation. Now, the first Zog Babylon was composed of Adamites going ahead and miscegenating with demons, with watchers, with, angels, fallen angels, and also with these gooks who were already there in this, Tarim Basin. And Bertrand Comparé, I went ahead and re-looked at him, he already covered that. They were miscegenated. And folks, every time when you've had a Zog Babylon, you've had white people essentially either on, miscegenating or on the verge of miscegenating. And the very first Zog Babylon was in Noah's day, and it was destroyed by Yahweh flushing it down. Now, were there other whites? And the answer is yes, there were. There were other whites in Western Europe and in Europe and in Western Asia.
and the niggers are not mentioned. You know, niggers are mentioned in the Bible. The gooks really are not mentioned at all, and certainly not the Redskins. They're not mentioned at all. But yet they exist. Folks, just because something isn't mentioned in the Bible doesn't make the Bible false. You have all these people who don't exactly believe what they're supposed to believe. Well, Japheth is, descended from Adam. And what happens is that in some ways, Canaan is descended from Adam. What you have had ever since Adamic man showed up, Frank Wigger said 7800 B.C. For my guy, it's more like 7000, but, I'm not going to argue about the 800 years. Somewhere around 7,000 years, according to the Septuagint's dating, not the Masoretic, King James's, Bishop Usher, September 1st, 2004, at 9 o'clock a.m., which makes essentially the world 6,015 years and some odd weeks in a day or two, 2 weeks in a day. In a couple hours, 6,015 years ago, 4004 B.C. Folks, it's more like 7,000 some years ago, according to the Septuagint dating. In any case, was the Sumerian civilization before the Egyptian civilization? And folks, part of dual seed line Christian identity belief is that Sargon the Great was also known as Cain. He went ahead and took these whites, or not quite whites, known as blackheads, and he organized them into an empire, which went quite a ways. He was the first emperor. But you had Chinese civilizations at the time. And folks, they're not really mentioned in the Bible because essentially the Bible is really about the struggle between two seed lines. It's between the good seed line of Adam and the evil seed line through Cain, who was not Adam's son. But you have had miscegenation. You have had a number of things. Now, was Canaan an Edomite? And was an Adamite? The answer is, yes. His father, Ham, was Noah's son, and Noah was a pure, perfect generation. So therefore, Canaan had some, through his father's side, had some Adamic blood. But shoot, he still was a Canaanite. He still was a mini-Jew, because his mother, as believed to be now, my Tubal-Cain sister, was a Cainite, a.k.a., before they were known as Jews. Someone went ahead and pointed out Christian identity is wrong because what happens, the word Jew was not really invented. You didn't even have the letter J. They were called Ewes. Because you never had the letter J until around the time of Shakespeare in 1600. And the answer is yes, that's true. Doesn't really matter because you were Jews before they were called Jews. Okay? Before there was a J in English. You had Jews before there was an England. England essentially meant land of the Angles, called themselves the Angli, and they called where they lived Angliland, land of the Angles, land of the Angli. That's where the term England comes from. There were Jews before there was an England, for that matter. But there have been many Zog. There have been three Zog Babylons. The second one, the very first Babylon. Babylon is not as old as Sumeria, because Babylon, the reason it was called Babylon is because Yahweh had just so recently flushed together all these people. And here was Cain trying to build another world, not Cain, but Nimrod trying to build another world empire. According to the book of Jasher, he had these garments of power, which were Adam and Eve's clothes that had been stolen from Noah by Ham and given to Cush, and then from Cush given to Nimrod. So, folks, you had to wear essentially these beasts of the field, being beasts as well here. When Cain came in, these beasts would roll over and give submission. That's how Nimrod became a mighty hunter, because you could go ahead and kill a lion or a tiger or a bear that essentially seen the garments, some of them, of his ancestors, and being compelled to roll over and play dead while, you know, Cain put an arrow through it. Essentially, Cain had a super baiting them, these beasts. Well, since these Negroes are referred to as beasts, and these non-whites are referred to as beasts, yes, he was a mighty hunter. And he tried to go ahead and build him another empire so soon after the flood. And it was too late to go ahead and flush down. Besides, Yahweh had already promised another flush down. It's too late to end the fire, you know, the world by fire or civil war, or, you know, collapse. So essentially, on the Babylon, he went ahead and confounded their tongues, so that, being unable to understand, they would go ahead and scatter like they were supposed to. And the name of the, you know, Babylon got its name because people couldn't understand their Babel. People couldn't understand that. The term Babylon has the same sort of, you know, term as the word barbarian, because to the ancient Greeks, the speech of non-Greeks sounded like the bark, 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 bark of dogs. So it's the term barbarian meant, you know, bark, bark, you know, bark, bark people. People who speak in bark, barks. Well, the term Babylon meant where the tongues were confounded by Yahweh in order to scatter them all out. And in the Book of Mormon, that's where they claim the first white, you know, of the Etherites took place. To America. There was a civilization before the Nephites, you know, or whatever was the father of the Nephites and Lamanites and whatever here in the Book of Mormon. So, folks, you have a good deal of history. And you got to understand that the Bible, the very first five books of the Bible, were written by Moses. And the soonest Moses showed up was 1450 or so BC, and maybe a little bit, maybe a couple hundred years before that. Didn't occur during the time of Ramses. Occurred during the time of, you know, the very first writing on the Bible. But folks, you had these Sumerians. Essentially, Cain wanted to make sure he got everything that was due him. And supposedly, if anybody probably understood writing, it was Cain. In order to make sure that he got all the bushels or pecks of wheat that he had coming, all the barley, all the einkorn wheat, all the sheep, all the cows, the goats, whatever he was due. The very first writing was just nothing more than a temple receipt for, yes, you paid your taxes or your tribute to Cain, whoever. Later on, Cain's family were known as the Akki, and you had the Akkadians take over from the Sumerians. And they took over, they became the ruling house of the Assyrians, who was a son of Shem. Asher was the son of Shem, supposedly the founder of the Assyrians, but folks, you end up having Jews go in and rule just like you have now. Folks, this is not the first Zog Babylon. I go ahead and I date it, you know, not according to what king or what empire rules, but rather by what that empire tries to do. And what that empire tries to do is race mix to where there are no more white people. And that's what the very first Zog Babylon under Noah did, to where there were no, there were about to be no pure-blooded Adamites, but you had an evil empire, which was a menace. And so Yahweh went in and flushed it down. In the case of Nimrod, he set up another Zog Babylon. In this case, Yahweh just simply made sure that Nimrod was killed, and that, you know, his dreams of empire and race mixing, of whites, of Adamites, were done away with. There were no Israelites in the time of Nimrod. And the third Zog Babylon is today, where just like Daniel 2:44 says, there will be a mixed iron and clay, and that unless those days should be shortened, you know, well, unless those days should be shortened, but they're going to try to mix the seed of men. And then a stone will go ahead and crush those feet of clay and iron, the legs of iron, the belly of brass, the shoulders of silver, arms and shoulders of silver, and the head of gold under Nebuchadnezzar. Folks, we live in Zog Babylon, the third and the final. And anybody who goes ahead and tries to save Zog Babylon, essentially is going against the will of Yahweh, is Yahweh's will that there should be sometime an end to all these Zog Babylons, all this race mixing, all this other stuff. And folks, all you have to do is just go ahead and turn on your TV and turn off the sound. You'll see more and more Mamzers, more and more often. Folks, actual white people are a minority. Even if, you know, like in this movement, they claim to be white, most of the time they're not. Okay? Oh, okay. Increase audio. I need to go ahead and pick up the thing, you know. Okay. Anyway, yes, while I went ahead and picked up the phone, I was leaning back in my chair, I went ahead and picked the phone here. So yes, scripture is written, you know, in stone. Well, it looks like Frank Wigger did go ahead and bail. So folks, what you have, in the case of Eli James, he's trying to go ahead and change Christian identity to something that is Mamzer friendly, something that is Roman Catholic friendly, something with Roman Catholic doctrines. And essentially what he does, he goes back and forth and back and forth about how some good Jews can be saved, and then there's a rebellion against that. And so, as a Jew, he says, no good Jews can be saved. It's sort of like Brian Real saying that no Mamzer can go ahead and enter, nobody with a thousandth of non-white blood can enter the congregation when the critter is not even a third white, if that. So what you have is you have a Jew, both Eli James and Bill Fink, claiming that no Jew can enter the congregation, and they're right. But the very first Jew which should be kicked out is Eli James, or Bill Fink, or both of them. They have no place. Christian identity, dual seed line Christian identity, should be essentially about, well, maniacs like me saying there is no hope. There is no hope to save Zog Babylon. It must be destroyed. It must go ahead and be destroyed in the Great Tribulation. So stop playing around to where you're going to save Zog Babylon from itself. Oh, this is just a terrible mistake. We need to get back to the constipation and bill of goods. We need to worship a set of paper here interpreted by Jews set up by lawyers in secret. Folks, it doesn't matter what it says on a sheet of paper. It doesn't matter what idiots go ahead and claim that it means. What goes ahead and makes our civilization what it is the character and quality of the people within it. And if they're no longer white, then you do not have a white civilization. You end up having Peter Skank, yap, 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 about a white civilization, a white this and that here, but pretty well claim that it could go ahead and be set up by something else here. Same thing with this egghead Samuel Huntington, what used to go ahead and sort of say in 2004. Who are we? Or who we are? You know, who are we? He didn't know who we were. I'm not quite sure. I never got to the end of the book, but he was sort of wondering if beaners and niggers could go ahead and somehow get high Protestant Episcopalian culture? And the answer is, of course, they can't. It's not in their nature. You have to be white in order to go ahead and have a white culture and white civilization. And the reason we do no longer have a white culture or white civilization is because we no longer have white people running things. In fact, we no longer have white people at all doing anything. And so, the only way the white race will be saved is to let nature take its course and for things to fall apart and for things to be destroyed in this great tribulation. And that's why I urge you, if you be white, don't go ahead and try to save Zog Babylon. Don't try to save Sodom and Gomorrah. Don't even try to save Zoar. Don't try to save the works of Satan and his children, the Jews and the Mamzers. Don't bother. What you should first save is you should go ahead and make sure you save yourself by being in right with Yahweh. Second thing, making sure you save as many of your family as are worth saving. And then third of all, when society collapses here and for your own good, go ahead and get a leadership position in your community. That's why I am not over one warlord, you know, going ahead and talking to one lord. I'm talking to 10,000 of each who lives in his own community. So that when the Great Tribulation is to go ahead and survive and to do that to what is necessary to survive, so that when Jesus Christ comes, there will be a start in saving what needs to be saved. So folks, I think this is pretty well enough here. I've gone ahead. Can we get back to the Sumer discussion? I don't know. I mean, essentially, I've agreed with you, guest number 12, guest number 13. Well, guest number 12 has claimed that Yahweh is no long earlier invented than 500 BC. Well, which is nonsense, okay? Anyway, guest number 12, I guess, is our local creatard or agnostic. Folks, just because people didn't read or write or there was no great literacy before, well, even before, what, 100 years or so ago, and now we are a post-literate civilization. I mean, race doesn't have anything to do with education or with reading or writing or taking a bath at least once a week. Doesn't have anything to do with that. The characteristics of a people are invested in its genes, not in what, you know, what it seeks to do. Okay? All right. In any case, folks, we were having some discussion about the ancient Sumerians, and folks, I'll go ahead and get the chat up. But for now, I'm going to go ahead. It looks like everybody's bailed. I'm going to go ahead and pretty well put this show to an end because the chat's pretty well come to an end. There's only about, what, three of us here? So I'm going to go ahead and say Hail Victory. May Yahweh bless. Good night.
White men clad in black are we, hi-yi-oh-ho, and we'll stamp out God's tyranny, hi-yi-oh-ho. White men go, we vote ho, on the city roof let the red cock crow. White men go, civil war ho, on the courthouse log, let red blood flow. When Adam yelled and Eve defend, Kyrie lay ice, than the ruling man. Kyrie. Wise men go, we vote ho, on the city roof, let the red cock crow. Wise men go, civil war ho, on the corner block, let red blood flow. For one man their rifles shoot, the Jews are laid low. On Zogling next we stomp our boots to stamp out Gasco. Wise men go, we vote ho, on the city roof, let the red cock crow. Wise men go, civil war ho, on the corner blocks, let red blood flow. The regime must only love his greed. Hi-yi-yo-ho. The love of God our only need. Hi-yi-yo-ho. Wise men go, we vote ho, on the city roof, let the red cock crow. Wise men go, civil war ho, on the corner block, let red blood flow. We'll conquer for our cause is right. Hi-yi-yo-ho. Our sons won't have to go and fight. Hi-yi-yo-ho. Wise men go, we vote ho, on the city roof, let the red cock crow. Wise men go, civil war ho, on the corner blocks, let red blood flow.